Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 11th, 2017. Jen, am I coming through okay? Or Gerard?
Yes, you sound fine.
Okay, thank you. All right, we broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. And our participant code is 419-303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number at 781-838-3728. You can download an app by going to our call page, and you'll get some information on that, how to do that. But you can download an app either for your computer or for your phone or whatever you're using. Hey, if anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Matthew chapter 15. We're going to pick up verse 32 through 39. Again, that's Matthew 15, verses 32 through 39. And Jesus called his disciples unto him and said, I have compassion on the multitude, because they continue with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I will not send them away fasting, lest they faint in the way. And his disciples said unto him, Whence should we have so much bread in the wilderness as to fill so great a multitude? And Jesus said unto them, How many loaves have ye? And they said, 7 and a few little fishes. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground. And he took the 7 loaves and the fishes, and gave thanks, and brake them, and gave to his disciples, and the disciples to the multitude. And they did all eat, and were filled. And they took up of the broken meat that was left 7 baskets full. And they that did eat were 4,000 men, besides women and children. And he sent away the multitude and took ship and came into the coast of Magdala. Okay, that was Matthew chapter 15, verses 32 through 39. This week, we mentioned last week we were going to write a paper and make a move in the courts. We're going to see what the magistrate is going to do. So we did file a paper, a show cause, for him to either act or show cause why he doesn't act. So we're going to read that tonight. I think it's 9 pages, I don't think it's really all that long. It's 1.5 spaced and 1-inch border, so it shouldn't take that long to read. Gerard, are you here? You going to read that? Oh, by the way, before we read that, if anybody would like a copy of that, you can go up to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. Okay. On the right-hand side of a blue bar, highlight the grand jury and click on docket. So highlight grand jury, click on docket. If you come down on the left-hand side first, list on the left-hand side, you'll see the number 1024-5, Magistrate Show Cause. Okay, so that's 1025. I'm sorry, let me go back here. Let me repeat that. I've got to go find this page again. Okay, grand jury, click on docket. And again, it's 1024-05. 1024-05, and it's called Magistrate Show Cause. Gerard, do you want to read it?
Yeah, sure. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, so Magistrate Show Cause, writ of mandamus. Okay, Magistrate Daniel J. Stewart is commanded to take judicial notice of the following and is commanded to act or show cause by what authority you have not acted. We, the people in this court of record, do accept Magistrate Daniel J. Stewart's bond and oath. silence or failure to act can only be equated with fraud, and there is a legal or more when there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or when an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. It is the duty of the courts to be watchful for constitutional rights of the citizen and against any stealthy encroachments thereon. The quote. Footnote. Okay. Magistrate Daniel J. Stewart is to take judicial notice of adjudicative facts. Lawrence E. Kahn lied and colluded to dismiss this case. In unlawful dismissal, U.S. Judge Lawrence E. Kahn, hereinafter Dishonorable Lawrence E. Kahn, claimed on April 9th, the federal defendants in this case asked the court via a letter motion to dismiss the case on the ground that the plaintiffs, as an apparently unincorporated organization, cannot proceed without counsel via letter motion, whereas we the people did not receive a notice of motion, nor were we the people notified of any hearing concerning the same. Furthermore, there is no such thing as a letter motion. We find no definition of the same in the federal rules, Bouvier's or Black's Law Dictionary, nor did said letter motion satisfy Rule 12.1. As per Federal Rule 12.1, motions and other papers, in order for an individual to move the court, a formal notice of motion must be, 1, served upon the other parties no less than 31 calendar days prior to the return date of the motion, have a return date, moving party must specifically articulate the relief requested, must set forth a factual basis if proven true would entitle the moving party to the requested relief. So those are 4 points that on 12.1. Hang on, this thing jumped. Hang on. Somehow I lost my place. Oh, I guess there are 6 points there.
So, right, about line 48.
Yeah, the way this paper jumped, it got me disoriented here. So 4 was, must set for a factual basis, if proven true, would entitle the moving party to the requested relief. 5, we the people must have an opportunity to file opposing papers. 6, a certificate of service is required at the conclusion of the motion. We the people were not served with a 31-day with a return date, as the moving party did not set forth and prove any factual basis. We the people were given no opportunity to file opposing papers, and no certificate of service was provided. Therefore, no motion was made, and it is obvious that the defense lawyer colluded via a wink and a nod and a letter with the Dishonorable Lawrence E. Kahn to commit felony rescue. We the people are not an organization. We are a self-impaneled grand jury, no different than the first known recorded self-impaneled grand jury in the 1215 that required justice through the Magna Carta, and with whom from the time to time impaneled themselves, but were more usually impaneled by the coroner or the sheriff. In the last few decades, the minions of the court, a.k.a. bar lawyers, have seized control of our judiciary and subverted our Article III courts. We the people are no different than the people who dissolved our political bands with Britain through the Declaration of Independence. We the people are no different than we the people who ordained and established the constitutions for the United States of America. We the people are those whose names are on every criminal complaint sanctioned by the grand jury since the inception of our nation and before. We the people are the people of the Fifth Amendment, a.k.a. the grand jury. We the people are the people of the Sixth Amendment, a.k.a. the jury. We the people are the people of the King's Bench. This is our court and not the Dishonorable Lawrence E. Kahn's court, nor any other judge or magistrate. The Dishonorable Lawrence E. Kahn stated that the court may sua sponte dismiss an action, whereas this is not the Dishonorable Lawrence E. Kahn's court. It is we the people's jury court. Summary proceedings are not permitted in a court of record. The Dishonorable Lawrence E. Kahn cannot second-guess the jury. All judges are magistrates in a court of record whose only duty is to administer the will of the jury and not his own. A judge may act sua sponte only when he is the lone jurist in an equity court, whereas this court of law, a.k.a. a court of record, is not an equity court. On June 14, 2017, Dishonorable Lawrence E. Kahn, acting under the color of law, committed fraud on the court by conspiring with the others to fraudulently remove documents through unlawful order stating for his cause to dismiss. And his, which was, if plaintiff does not obtain counsel to represent it within 30 days, the action shall be dismissed with prejudice. See decision and order dated June 14, 2017, filed with the court. Whereas we had already made it clear that on May 11, 2017, that we will call upon Attorney General Sessions to send U.S. prosecutors to prosecute our indictments in this court of record, which will be the beginning of restoring justice in our courts. See information brief clarifying this extraordinary proceeding dated May 11, 2017, filed with the court. On June 12, 2017, we the people, through the grand jury, filed a writ of error with this court, which clearly stated the U.S. Attorney General will be providing U.S. prosecutors or approve a special common law prosecutor. See the writ of error dated June 14, 2017, filed with the court. Lawrence E. Kahn is in bad behavior and is therefore no longer a U.S. District Judge. The judges of both the Supreme and Inferior Court shall hold their offices during good behavior. And that's the U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 1. Obedience to the law of the land is good behavior. This Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all the treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or the laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. That's the U.S. Constitution, Article 6. On July 17, 2017, a true bill of indictment was filed by the grand jury against the dishonorable Lawrence E. Kahn for acting under color of law in an attempt to seize control of this court in order to cover up crimes, and was charged with concealment, felony rescue, trespass upon the case, denial of due process, manufacturing an unlawful order, and aiding and abetting. Magistrate Daniel J. Stewart is to take judicial notice of the purpose of this extraordinary proceeding. On December 13, 2016, we the people file a memorandum of facts that prove the power and authority of we the people, which is being exercised through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. This grand jury was overwhelmingly unified by reconstituting common law grand juries in all 3,133 United States counties and is composed of thousands of people. The purpose of this grand jury is to bring justice subverts both foreign and domestic, acting under color of law within our government. This grand jury will remain in session until we can cure the nation from the tyrants at large and reinstate our Constitution within our courts. On January 5, 2017, we the people filed a judicial notice concerning this extraordinary process, concluding that this is a case concerning subversion by enemies both foreign and domestic within our government, including our federal judiciary. We the people have reported these subversions over the past year in all 94 federal district courts through informations, and the federal judiciary has not acted upon them. We the people over the past year has served writs upon all servants within our federal government demanding obedience to the law of the land, and have filed said writs in all 94 federal district courts, and the response has been a deafening silence as our elected servants continue their lawlessness. On January 9, 2017, we the people filed a memorandum of law in support of authority of the grand jury, concluding that we the people ordained and established a constitution for the United States of America. We the people vested Congress with statute-making powers. We the people defined and limited that power of statute-making. We the people limited law-making powers to ourselves alone. We the people did not vest the judiciary with lawmaking powers. We the people are the judicial tribunal, having attributes and exercising functions independent of the person of the magistrate designated generally to hold it, and proceed according to the course of the common law. On January 9, 2017, we the people filed a memorandum of law concerning jury tampering and stacking, concluding that the federal trial handbook tampers with the jury and robs the people sovereign right to judge, and that federal questionnaire for jurists, which asks many inappropriate questions has become a tool for trial judges and prosecutors to profile and stack the jury for favorable results for political favors, and is therefore destructive to liberty. On January 9, 2017, We the People filed a memorandum of law in support of Article III courts, concluding that Congress has given the power to create only Article III courts of record and equity courts ruled by American jurisprudence, a.k.a. United States District Court for the District. These courts proceed under the rules of common law, and the judges are bound to the law of the land and hold the office only when they are obedient to the law of the land. On January 9th, no, I'm sorry, hang on a minute here.
Line 160, January 9th,
September. Oh, okay, on January 9th, We the People filed a memorandum of law in support of understanding our founding documents, concluding that the reading of the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers bear absolute proof that the Constitution is not moot and was written by ordinary men with ordinary common sense, meaning simply that it what it says, needing no bar interpreter whose job it is to spread confusion and destroy the Constitution. On January 13th, We the People filed a memorandum of law in support of jurisdiction, concluding that all Article III courts are courts of record and to proceed under the rules of common law. Common law is nature's law ordained by God. Constitutions are an unalienable right ordained by sovereign people. Legislators are bound by the chains of the Constitution and have no authority to create governments or write laws outside of those bounds. Any judge resting in the fiction of law proceeds under the color of law and loses all immunity. Decisions of such inferior court are subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly rather than resort to an appeal to an appellate court. On March 1st, 2017, We the People filed a memorandum of law in support of Amendment 2, which is an unalienable right that has demonstrated throughout history it is the necessity of a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to bear arms, to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. On April 17, 2017, We the People filed a memorandum of law in support of the common law, concluding that we, the sovereign people, have unalienable rights under the laws of nature, nature's God, a.k.a. common law. We the people are not bound by statutes, codes, or regulations. Congress has no authority to codify and license our rights, and the court has no authority to enforce such repugnant statutes. Any judge restraining said rights is in bad behavior and will in due time suffer the wrath of the people through indictments and judgments in courts of justice. On April 17, 2017, We the People filed a memorandum of law in support of standing, concluding that we, the sovereign people, provided for ourselves through the Constitution, courts of justice, called Article III courts, where we the people have standing, whether we are one or a thousand. Since Congress doesn't have the backbone to start removing these seditious judges acting in bad behavior through impeachment for robbing the people of their standing, due process, and Article III courts of record, they will in due time suffer the wrath of we, the sovereign people, through indictments and judgments in courts of records. It has been our experience that both the federal and state judiciaries are at war with the Constitution, and we the people are actively engaged in covering up subversion, murder, torture, manipulating evidence, and RICO on a national level. If anyone, Magistrate Daniel
Stewart... I think maybe you might want to read that. That was a difficult paragraph. It has been our experience that both the federal and state judiciaries are at war with the Constitution and we the people, and are actively engaged in covering up subversion, murder, torture, manipulation, evidence, and RICO on a national level.
Right.
You missed the comma. That's what happened.
Right. It's not that we the people are actively engaged.
Right.
Yeah. See, commas are important in law, right? Change the whole meaning. Okay, so next page. Magistrate Daniel J. Stewart is to be cognizant that if anyone has been dispossessed without the legal judgment of his peers from his lands, homes, franchises, or from his right, we will immediately restore to him, and if a dispute arises over this, then it will be decided by the 25 jurors of whom mention is made below in the clause for securing the peace. Moreover, for all those possessions from which anyone has, without lawful judgment of his peers, been seized or removed by our government, we will immediately grant full justice therein. Magna Carta, paragraph 52. It has been we the people's experience that lawyers claim that they do not understand our papers and advise their victims to ignore our papers, while judges mislabel or conceal our papers and place clerks in jeopardy. In both cases, the aforesaid crimes, which judges and lawyers believe they are safe from justice by hiding behind the fiction, we follow the rules of the court and forms as much as possible, and we use the language of our founding fathers, the U.S. Supreme Court, the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, Declaration of Independence, and the principles of the common law, all of which are law of the land. So, if you never learn those things in school, please be advised that ignorance of the law is no excuse. Judges and magistrates and lawyers are expected to know the law. We the people are not naive concerning the ploys of the lawless judiciary, and have therefore filed this action not only in the Northern Federal District of New York, but also with the United States Congress, the United States Senate, the U.S. Attorney General's Office, President Trump, and most importantly, we the people via the Internet. And if necessary, we will move this case to another federal district for action. In time, justice will prevail, and we the people will take back our courts. If Magistrate Daniel Stewart continues in his silence, that is fraud, we will conclude that he is complicit with the tyrant, the dishonorable Lawrence E. Conn, in subversion against the United States of America, whereas failure to respond within 20 days will result in bringing this issue before the grand jury for indictment. Justice trumps form, quote-unquote, trumps form. In conclusion, it is the duty of the magistrate, Daniel J. Stewart, to advise the grand jury any of its shortcomings concerning its form, understanding that in the interest of justice, content prevails over form, and that in the end, justice must be served. Wherefore, Magistrate Daniel J. Stewart thus far has failed to act and administrate his duties, we the people now command Magistrate Daniel J. Stewart to obey the law of the land and act upon the following immediately, or show cause by what authority you do not act. Correct the fraudulent order by dishonorable Lawrence E. Conn to dismiss and reinstate in the interest of justice under Rule 41, or show cause by what authority you do not act. Signed and entered into the record the default by Governor A. Cuomo, New York State Senate Majority Leader John J. Flanagan, and New York State Assembly Speaker Carl E. Hedesy, defendants, and return 3 copies, or show cause by what authority you do not act. Now that was the gun suit, that last line. Dated September 8, 2017, grand jury foreman with our seal. So that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Gerard.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we open up for Q&A, if anybody has any questions or comments about that, we'll take that. The Q&A right now is open. Let's first move over to, I think it's open. Did we open Q&A? Yeah, we did. Okay, so anybody wants to get into Q&A, star 6. Jan, do we have any announcements or questions?
Yes, I have one announcement and 2 questions here. Let me find the announcement. The first announcement is we are instituting a new Tuesday night, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, welcome committee call, and that will meet the 2nd and the 4th Tuesdays of the month. Previously, we have not had a welcome committee call. That's the only committee that didn't have one, so we're going to start one. Rhonda Miner is the welcome committee director, and she'll be heading that up. So please check in tomorrow night at 9 o'clock and see what the Welcome Committee is all about. Now, the first question I have is, our government was founded on the separation of powers. However, with the legislative created courts, how is this possible?
I'm sorry. Our government was founded on the separation of powers. I got that part.
Okay.
What's the second part of the question?
However, with the legislative created courts, how is this possible?
Well, first of all, legislation is only to legislate that which we've permitted them to legislate. We've ordained and established what they can legislate, which would be statutes and codes, of course. So anything beyond that, any court that the legislators have created that is not an Article III court, that is not under the court, a court of record operating under the common law, and so any court created outside of that criteria is not a lawful court, and therefore it's null and void, has no power, no authority. All too often, unfortunately, people make the battle, okay, against the government, trying to fight them in their sandbox, dealing with all these unconstitutional statutes and laws and acts of Congress that created different systems with inside of our judiciary that is not lawful. We've got to stop playing the man on the land game and get down to the basics and get down to the facts. We are a common law government, the common law people. We're under the common law. We established and gave authority and power to Congress only to create Article III courts and no other power beyond that. Of course, there are administrative courts, but they have no power in law per se. They cannot fine or incarcerate. And administrative courts are things that people participate with and agree through their participation. There may be, of course, all kinds of different administrative processes. And people can agree to participate or not. So anything else they cannot do. So there is no contradiction here. There is no problem here. The problem is the ignorance of we the people. I speak to myself first, and everybody needs to realize we need to bone up on this and come to an understanding of what the Constitution really says and what the Constitution really means. And clearly, if you really want to understand the Constitution, if you're perplexed in any way about it, we've got the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. That really expounds upon the Constitution. There is no contradiction. There is no problem, really, except for with criminals who have taken control. And again, we the people are too ignorant. We remained ignorant. You know, we got our telephones and we do this, two or three word texting to each other. I mean, we've really come down to really a serious problem. We don't really communicate. We don't debate. They're just teaching us to just be really morons, nitwits, ignorant individuals. We got to come above it. Hopefully I answered the question. Is that the only question, by the way?
Say again, John. I was just unmuting.
Okay.
Okay, the next question is for Brent. Do you know of any case where prosecutors or judges have been successfully sued for misconduct or violation of their oath of office?
And the answer is yes. If I'm heard, is my voice coming through?
Yep, we're getting you. Well,
oh, good. Well, yeah, it worked this time. The answer is yes. And if you go to the internet, you can type in search words for that subject and probably pull up a lot of cases, state and federal, where judges have been sued. I'm reminded of one particular federal case where an employee of a federal judge sued the federal judge for bad acts. And the question is always the same when you sue a judge. Did the judge act within the scope of his judicial role? If he did, then he has immunity from lawsuit. If he did not act within the scope of his judicial role, then he is stripped of immunity, and you can sue his pants off.
Same thing, of course, is true with all government employees. If they act outside the scope of their authority, a judge, for example, has the authority of judicial discretion as a judge. If he acts outside the scope of that authority, the law says he has no immunity. But I hasten to add that when you sue a judge, even if you're right, you're facing an uphill battle, and it can be done. And I've read cases where people have won, but they've had to fight pretty hard, and usually then it goes up on appeal. You have to be committed to the process to see it through. Now, to show you how far the judicial role goes, this is amazing how far the judicial role can go, because a judge can do anything, no matter how crazy, no matter how against the law, against due process it is. If he does it within his judicial role, he has immunity. Case in point, a judge in the notorious and famous city-state of Chicago, Illinois, had some rental property. He was a slumlord of sorts, and he had a deadbeat that wouldn't pay his rent, and he couldn't get him out of the property. He tried and tried. Finally, he went down to the property, thought he'd gotten him out, and he went inside the apartment, and lo and behold, the man had his sleeping bag was still sleeping there. Well, there was a bad neighborhood, and the judge happened to have a gun on him. Now, in Chicago, that's quite a trick, but he had one on him. Maybe it was because he was a judge. He took his gun out, and he held the gun to his head, and he opened court, and he conducted a hearing. They asked him if he had anything he wanted to say, and he finally got his, distrainer. That's where you throw people out of rental property, and he ruled in his own favor. Now, of course, no man can be a judge in his own case, as the maxim of our common law has been for centuries. Lord Coke made that famous back in the 1600s. No man can be a judge in his own cause, his own case. Well, this guy did that, but he acted, I believe it was the Seventh Federal Circuit, and I went all the way up. The Federal Circuit said he acted within the scope of his judicial authority, even though he probably committed a crime pulling a pistol. He still was in the scope of his judicial authority, and therefore he had immunity for what he did. But he may be prosecuted by a prosecutor, maybe, for other crimes having to do with firearms, but not for stepping outside the scope, keyword scope, of judicial authority. Remember when all authority, Romans chapter 13, is from the true lawgiver himself, the allodial owner of all land on the planet. The creator of heaven and earth and all that in them is, he delegates all authority. He's a fountain, the spring, the source of all authority. And all authority is then delegated through channels to men, sometimes directly to the individual. And those bits of authority we call fundamental rights. You can find some of them in the Bill of Rights, for instance, the right to remain silent, the right to self-protection, Second Amendment, etc., the right to speedy trial, and the right to a jury trial. Those are fundamental rights delegated direct from God, but other rights may be delegated through channels. A judge's authority is delegated from God. All authority is from God. If it's not from God, it's not authority. And it came to that judge through channels delegated to other men from God ultimately. But in every case, when the fellow has delegated authority, he has a scope. That means within which he must operate. Authority, the definition of authority, is discretion to act respecting a given matter. And so a father has authority, but that authority is limited by a scope. He has authority respecting his family, not respecting his neighbor's family. He has authority respecting his wife, not respecting his neighbor's wife. And his wife has authority respecting him, not respecting some other man. As the Bible says, makes the strong statement, wives, obey your own husbands. How many women are out there, outside of the scope of their authority, their duty, obeying other men, working in the workforce, obeying other men than their husbands? Well, see, that's outside of the scope of her authority and her discretion. And that's what Paul commands us women to not to do. And anyway, I'm getting back to this, making the point, bringing it down to the family, that all authority has a scope. And a judge has scope, a scope of authority. He steps outside of it, he may get clipped. That's true also of other government employees. Back to you, John.
Hey, thank
or Jan.
You,
yeah.
Appreciate it. All right. Any other questions out there, Jen?
No, that was the last one. I don't have any other reports for tonight either.
Okay, and what about Robert? Does he have anything or nobody
no.
has anything? Okay.
No, Robert doesn't.
All right, well, final thing is, again, I want to remind everybody, you know, bills have to be paid here, and we're asking everybody to consider giving us $5 a month or more as a donation to support the work that we're doing and pay for the paperwork and the filing and all the stuff that we're doing here. It costs money. So, and we're suffering not being able to pay our bills. All right, with that, we're going to move on. Gerard, you got anything in particular?
No,
Gerard?
Not really.
Nope. Okay. All right, well, again, we filed our paper on I believe it was the 8th or the 9th. It was Friday. What day was Friday? Matter of fact, let me look right on here. I've got the date on here.
It was the 8th.
September 8th, so that was Friday. It went out in Friday's mail, certified, and so we know they received it today. And we sent copies, of course, to all involved, and you know, the U.S. Senate, the Congress, the President, Jeff Sessions, one to the court, and of course directly to the magistrate Daniel Stewart. Okay, I guess if we have nothing else, let me see if I get any notes here. Nothing particular, so we'll just move over to Brent Winters. And again, we've got the Q&A open, star 6 to get into Q&A. I think it's star 6, and it'll tell you to push 1 or whatever. So we're going to move over to Brent Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thanks, and again, I reiterate that my points of view may or may not agree with National Liberty Alliance, but they're kind enough to allow me to say a few things about what I have discovered or what I have concluded. For what it's worth, I pass it along to you. A word about separation of powers, and I'm glad people ask those kind of questions. I know this folk keep coming back to, I do too, come back to fundamental things. Absolutely fundamental. You got to keep coming back and shoring up the foundations. If we don't do that's our problem. We're off entirely. We don't talk about fundamental things, and neither do the pundits, the commentators that are controlling the narrative in our country. Coming back to fundamental things, separation of powers. In the federal government and likewise in the state governments, the Supreme Court of the United States, the Congress of the United States, and the presidency, or the president of the United States, are those men that occupy three separate powers. The Congress of the United States has no ultimate power over the presidency or the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has no ultimate power, no final power over the Congress and the president. And none of those three have ultimate power over the other. It is a misnomer. It is a damnable lie that's been pushed upon us since about 1910, and a book by a fellow named Charles Beard. It's a lie that the Supreme Court of the United States is the final word on anything. They aren't, any more than the President of the United States is, any more than the Congress of the United States is. Those three branches of government operate independently. Now, take note here that I'm talking about the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm not talking about the rest of the federal courts. It is only the Supreme Court that our Constitution directly establishes. Our Constitution of the United States has branches that grow out of it. It's a trunk of a tree, and it's rooted in our common law. And the three branches that grow out of that trunk are the presidency, the executive branch, in other words, the legislative branch, national legislative branch called Congress, and the Supreme Court, not the rest of the courts. Congress does not establish the Supreme Court of the United States. Our Constitution establishes it, just as our Constitution directly establishes the Congress of the United States and the presidency. But the rest of the federal courts, Congress establishes all of the federal district courts. Congress has established all of the appellate courts. Congress is the one that set all those courts up. And he who has the power to create has the power to destroy what he has created. It is his prerogative, that branch of government. Well, Congress has the power to annihilate, destroy, do away with the stroke of a pen every federal court is ever established. That means all the district courts of the United States, or any part of them, or any appellate court, or any part of them, they can do away with them. They can modify them. They can limit the number of judges. They can limit the number of cases. They can even limit the Congress of the United States. Our Constitution gives Congress the power to limit the jurisdiction of the federal courts. But they do not have the power to limit the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court of the United States. They have no power at all. And the three branches of government, and this is what folk can get real uncomfortable with, because it gets real messy. Because no one has the power, none of these three branches has the power to trump the other, either of the other two branches, then our government is wholly divided and fighting all the time. And I just cringe, and I have for a long time cringe when I hear the press and the newspapers say, why can't we just get along and do something for the American people? Why is there so much political infighting in Congress? And, you know, Congress is in two branches. We don't talk about that, but it's the Senate and the House of Representatives are divided. Our legislative branch is divided into two branches, and they're fighting all the time. And inside of those branches, there's a constant fight going on. There's fights that go on among all people, seems like, and of our government, and rightly so. And if we ever get to the point that they aren't fighting, then they'll start combining together in a monolith of power with which we cannot deal, and they will destroy us. That is why our Constitution, because it follows our common law tradition, is brief of common law government. It makes sure that power is divided and that all of the powers of government, well, it ensures they're at odds because men are by nature at odds. And unless they're given financial incentive to combine, then we're free. And all the problems we have of corruption in government have happened when those in government have seen opportunity to get away with combining, agreeing, so they can all profit and financial incentive. We don't want that to happen. We want them at odds constantly. And we want the courts utterly independent. I don't care how crazy they get. I'd rather have them independent than controlled by the Congress or the President. But what's the use of having courts if they're controlled by the Congress or the President? I'm reminded of that story. I don't remember the details, but it was back in the early 1800s. Early 1800s. And there were some people in Canada that were rebelling against the government of the Crown of England. Of course, we were an independent country by that time. I believe Van Buren was president. Yes, he was. And it had to do with a boat that the rebels over in Canada rented or paid an American who had a boat to ferry some troops across the St. Lawrence Seaway or something. Well, within all of that rebellion, the American got killed. He was killed as a combatant. And the state of New York ended up taking the Canadian that had killed him. I believe he was a British subject who was trying to stop the rebellion. And the state of New York prosecuted him for murder. And the Crown of England understood that President Van Buren had no power to influence the courts. Because they're a common law country, they accepted that. There was nothing they could do. But the Queen of Spain wrote Van Buren a letter and said, how is it that you cannot control your courts? She was from a civil law country. She wasn't from a common law country. And in a country like that, the chief executive, the powerful party, controls the whole blasted government. And it's still true, by the way, in Spain and Germany and South America, that all the judges are totally dependent upon the executive power for their pay and their job. And if they don't carry water for the powerful party in government, they're going to get fired. God help us if we ever get to that position. And I know we're flirting with it all the time, but it's up to us to keep fighting it, talking about it, and saying otherwise, and keeping the opinion alive, as we're doing right now, by whoever raised that question. I'm glad you raised it. We can talk about it. It's of utmost importance to our liberty. If there's anything that's important, it is separation of powers. If we just had that in its cleanness. And, of course, the question was, too, also, why is it that Congress has in power, and that has power, for example, and this is what I got the question, how is it that Congress has the power to impeach a judge or impeach a president if there's separation of powers? Well, there is separation of powers, and the very fact that Congress would impeach a judge and throw him out of office, impeach a president and throw him out of office, is the badge of that separation of power. Well, that's a few comments I wanted to make because it excited me that the question was brought up. But I'm glad that we've been able to talk about it a little bit. I'm in the Declaration of 76. I'm going through it. It's been a couple of months, not a couple of weeks, since we've dealt directly with it for a number of reasons, but we're up to paragraph 9, and our Declaration of 76 is cataloging what the emperor in the British colonies was doing. Again, it bears repeating, King George III was king in England, but he wasn't king in the colonies, he wasn't king in Canada, he wasn't king in India, he was emperor. He wasn't king in the Caribbean islands, the British Caribbean islands, he was emperor. And he claimed to be emperor here. And nobody around the world complained in the British Empire except us. We said, well, you can do that to other people on the other side of the world, but we're British. That's what the Americans said, that's what the colonists said, and you can't do that to us. We're bound by ties of consanguinity. That means common blood. We're cousins. We're British too. You can't do that to us. And that's why one of the great reasons why the war occurred. It had to do, call it what you will, it had to do with race. These people were of the same race. That's Latin for root. They were of the same root. They were descended from the same fathers. And they didn't want to be treated as brothers different than the rest of the family. That's what it boiled down to. He, the emperor, King George III, paragraph 9, Declaration of 76, has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that person obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. This is plumb pregnant with lively questions that are applicable today. I've been traveling the last few weeks and away from home in other states, and there were a good many places I stopped to get gasoline or to get something to eat, and I didn't see any white people. Or, I should say, black people. Black people have been here as long as the white people. But I didn't see anything, to put it in other terms, I didn't see anything but immigrants. Immigrants from India, from the Arab countries, from Mexico. And it all of a sudden came home to me, the statistics I had been reading, that we are no longer a white Christian people, primarily. The white Christian folk are outnumbered, according to some statistics I read. Is that bad? Are we better than other people? No, that's not it. But it is true that the people that are here, until very recently, gave priority to Christian Europeans. Until, as a matter of fact, that was true until the Johnson administration. Oh, other people could come in, but not to the numbers that people from the north of Europe that were Christian could come in. Why is that? Well, that was because the people up until the Johnson administration, and that had occurred from the beginning of our country forward, the people that lived here in America didn't want to happen what is now happening. Vicious, hateful, bloodthirsty, zealots for their religious point of view, and there cannot be government without religion, are in America slitting throats and murdering people as they're doing in Europe and as they're doing around the world, as they've done to each other for centuries. We didn't want that. Well, now we're getting it. Now, I'm not saying some of the people I saw, a lot of them I saw, of course, were Mexicans. I don't think they're slitting anybody's throat, but there are some that are. And it says here, obstructing the laws of naturalization. If there's anything that's happened for the past 8 years has been the obstruction of laws for naturalization. If people come here, and the Bible's clear on this too, if people want to come here, they want to be friendly, they want to be productive, and this goes for every country, that country should let them in. And we should let them in regardless of their race, their color, their creed. But that's not what we're doing. The last 8 years during the Obama power trip, those in government obstructed the laws for naturalization. Matter of fact, they just flattened them. And people, and what I saw was indicative of this, what I've seen in the last few weeks traveling, people have been pouring into our country. I think I mentioned this in my little hometown in the Wabash Valley. There are no foreigners there to speak of. We're kind of in the middle of America, but they're came an Arab family, two boys and their father. They bought a gas station in this little town just north of where I grew up. Just happens to be this town of 1,500 people, 1,500 people, and just outside of town is one of the largest above-ground oil reserves in the world. One of the major oil companies been there. It used to be Ohio Oil, and now it's called Marathon Oil. Tank farm, we call it. Well, this fellow had been seen over the tank farm taking pictures. And other things were happening. They owned the gas station. I bought gas there a few times, talked to the fellows, tried to be friendly with them. I knew people that wouldn't trade with them at all. All of a sudden, one day, the parking lot around the only gas station in town, by the way, just this one little gas station, the parking lot filled with a dozen black SUVs, no license plates, blackened windows, outpiled men in black jackets and automatic rifles, and arrested these three Arab men. And the house right beside the gas station they had been using to underground railroad terrorists into the United States. And he'd been over there planning, taking pictures, sending them to the other side of the world, planning ways to blow up that tank farm. Amazing. It came home to me. And I'd been friendly with these fellows. I'd asked them if they'd been to church in town. Oh, yeah, we went to the Bible church out here, but those people are racist, they told me. And I even gave them, well, I didn't give them to them, I sold them some of my Constitution books. I thought, well, maybe these fellows are interested. The fellow, one of them told me, oh, I want to go to law school. I realized now he was lying. These guys were, they were playing a game. It was all a ruse. It was a matter of warfare. But they're gone. We're at war. Funny thing about that particular incident, it did not appear in any, there are three little newspapers in the county, three little towns, didn't appear in one of them. I heard about it later on. I had been gone from home. Why is it this stuff's being covered up? I'm sure it's going on all over the country. Nobody's saying anything. The feds did come and arrest them. I don't know why they didn't put it in the newspapers, why they didn't say they were Islamic terrorists. But the laws, obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, they have been obstructed. They have been ignored, just flattened. And then Trump tried to put them up in place again, and they were the courts tried to flatten. And then it says, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration hither. Refusing to pass others, that means laws of naturalization, to encourage migration hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. Now, what does that mean, and why is that important? Conditions of new appropriations of land. Well, the reason is this, because mankind wants land. Why does he want land? Because land is wealth, always has been, always will be. There's not one bit of wealth in this world that does not come out of the land. It's either worried from the mountains, so we have minerals, or it's coaxed from the dirt so that we can have food, timber, minerals, and able all of the conveniences we enjoy, and create, of course, a lot of trade and a lot of jobs and money. Wealth comes out of the land, and men wanted it. I'd been traveling out west, and I headed north from down in South Texas, going up to the northwest. And by the time I got up as far as Nevada, there was a heavy haze everywhere. There aren't many trees in Nevada, by the way. Nevada's pretty much just a basin and range desert kind of place. Thought, what is this? The locals told me, well, this is the smoke coming down from the northwest. And I got further and I got thicker. And by the time I got to the northwest, to the edges of it, it was so thick you couldn't see more than a mile out on the open prairie. And the folk there told me, well, that's the BLM. It's their fault. I said, how's that? Well, they don't let anybody go on the government land, which, of course, the government, federal government owns, claims they own the land, most of the land in some of those states, half of it anyway. They won't let anybody go on to the land. They won't let people freely cut wood. The wood piles up and the trash and the junk, and then it's like a dry tinder box that catches on fire. Of course, if you try to stop it from burning your house down by setting up a small berm at the edge of your possessions, your land, so it won't burn down your barns and your building and your house, or whatever you got there, tool shed, you'll be arrested and thrown in jail for 5 years. That's exactly what happened to the Hammond family out in Oregon. 5 years for trying to stop a fire that the BLM had set. Then I talked to a fella, friend, down in Texas, and where the floods are, and he lives down in the Galveston area on the coast. And I said, how's things going? He said, well, the BLM's here, and if you need food or supplies or medical supplies or blankets or anything to survive, they will not help you. The only thing they'll do is come and get you off your land, and they won't bring you back. The BLM, I said, what's the BLM doing in Texas? There is no BLM land in Texas. He said, no, there isn't. But they got some up on the Red River last time it flooded, and now they're trying to get some down here. The government wants land, just like the government wants all the, or rather the banks, which is the government, I guess. They want all the gold. They want all of it. And they want all the land, too. Well, for the first time it hit me like a 12-pound sledge right between my eyes. This land out here, this BLM land, 69-70% of it, of the land in Nevada, 90%, 92, 94, I forget what it is. It's above 90-something in Alaska. I think there's only a percent and a half or 2% of the land in Alaska is private land. The rest of it's state and federal land, they say. The only way that fire problem is going to be solved is if that land is sold to private concern, private parties. And what belongs to everybody, and that's what the BLM says the land is, belongs to all Americans. What belongs to everybody belongs to nobody. And the worst trustee in the world is the government. Ask the American Indian. He'll tell you all about it. And it's true. You can see it in history. They can't be good trustees because there are too many people involved, but not enough to take care of the land, to bear the land. But if it were in private hands, there would be no more fires. No, everybody would take care of their own land. They'd clean it up. They wouldn't allow it. They wouldn't want to. Why? Because they don't want to destroy it. It's wealth to them. The federal government doesn't see it that way. And the federal government never will see it that way. The federal government is not a business. It's foolish to talk about. If we run government like business, everything would be okay. Well, that's not going to happen. Why? Well, because people that work for government get a salary. It's set. No matter whether they do the right thing or the wrong thing, they get paid. You don't run government like business because it's impossible. It's never been done in the history of Adam's race. It will never be done. Let's put that aside, shelve it, and say this. There are a few things that government has to do that we can't do. Actually, only two. One is provide courts. They can't even do that, obviously. We're seeing that. But that's one thing we do give them power to do. And to provide national defense from foreign invaders. They do a poor job of that, too. They end up just making adventures out of it and going blowing up countries, it seems, these days. So even those two things, they don't do well. But we have chosen to lay over responsibility for those two things. But all these other things they try to do, like educate the children, That doesn't work. It never worked. It's an experiment. Started in the 1920s about. It's an utter failure. So there's not much government can do at all. There are some things we relegate to government because it's the only way we can do what has to be done. National defense, in some cases, not all, ought to be relegated to government, and only for limited periods of time, and justice and self-defense. Well, I think, let me see if I'm at the end of this paragraph. Let me just try to finish this. Well, let me read what I've got here. This as a comment on paragraph 9, and then we'll quit. Underlying all of the common law tradition is the law of the land, or as Magna Carta calls it, land law. Land law, Latin lex terrae, lex terrae. Because its roots and rights arise from property rights and land use. That's our common law. Land, the reason it's called the law of the land, because it recognizes that all wealth, arises from land. And because our common law grew among farmers and miners, its principles are foremost seen in the individual's lordship, that's his stewardship over land, his rights and property, and his property and those rights, quoting Thomas Jefferson. He said you have rights in your property, you have property in your rights. The two words are synonyms, rights and property. By contrast, the law of the city tradition, the civil law tradition, is about government lording it over people. You see, the law of the land, our common law, is about dominating land, taking lordship, stewardship over land. The law of the city, the civil law, which governs the rest of the world outside of the common law countries, is about dominating men. That's the difference. Thus, civil law-minded government will permit entry onto uninhabited land only when it can dominate those men entering that land. A fellow at home, my home county, there's a few of these signs around. People that have been on their farms for a long time will have a sign out front. And one particular fellow I'm thinking of, it says, the sign says, entered 1840. That's when his great-granddad entered. That means he has petus possessio. He walked onto the property for the first time and staked a claim. I think it was $5 an acre was the legislation under Andy Jackson back at that time. And that land then became his. That's what this means when it talks about entry to land. The word territory comes from the civil law tradition. This idea of territory is part and parcel of the law of the city and spells the distinction between the law of the land and the law of the city. Because the word territory comes from the law of the city tradition, and it signifies that land area over which Rome extended her terror. Government by terror. Now, if we can't relate to that today, we never will. Today, we live under government by terror. You've all seen that bumper sticker that says, when people fear the government, there is tyranny. And when the government fear the people, there is liberty. Well, the whole idea of the civil law tradition, the law of the city tradition, is to keep people in terror, the people over a certain territory. And civil law government dominates and controls through terrorism throughout the world. And it's coming here, it's pressing in upon us. The inciting of fear of others or of that government itself, government by terror. Well, back to you, John. That's enough for this time. Thanks for allowing me to say a few words.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. Appreciate your time. Okay. We're open for Q&A, so if anybody has any questions or comments or anything particularly they want to share, now is the time to do it. Just hit star 6, uh-huh. And you can, and I think it says hit star 1 after that. But anyway, star 6 to get into the Q&A. All right, our first person out there, it looks like it is, do we have Chris? Oh, Crystal, go right ahead. Someone unmuted.
Hi, how are you?
How you doing, Crystal?
Okay. First of all, everybody needs to watch that American Greed that comes on TV. It's on NBC. And they've had some wonderful, wonderful documents pertaining to a little bit of everything. I was watching one of the shows, I guess was it last night, and I believe it comes on the weekends. And you can go back on demand so you can review it. The three attorneys that got arrested, Cunningham, it was about that, oh, I forgot the name of that medication that started, and men started growing breasts. And there was like, I think it was either a $200 million or a $200 billion lawsuit that was settled. And what they've been doing to all the cases and stuff like that, they was putting it in like a trust fund, and then they put the money into a donation, and come to find out they were pocketing everything. Well, anyways, they all three of them got 20 years put in prison, and they got to pay all this back. And people are recouping their money. Like, for example, when people are even in a car accident or whatever, cases may start up to $300,000, and all these attorneys are settling the cases behind closed doors, giving the people like $2,000, $5,000, $30,000, and they pocket the rest. So everybody needs, and like I was telling you about what was happening to my cases, so I did put the grievance in because when I went to my case, and these cases came up unbeknown to me. So that you're investigating on that right now. There was, what else was I? Oh, gosh. Okay, so it's American Greed. And there was something else. Oh, and also today on one of the talk shows, it's called Harry. It's on Fox TV station. And he had the first Afro-American sheriff. I think it either was in Louisiana or in Texas. And she was a former police officer and then a detective. And she ran for sheriff, and she became sheriff. So I think her first name was Kathy. I don't have the record, but I think you definitely need to notify her because the responsibility and the authority and power that she has that she's probably not even aware of. And those are the two things I just want to touch base with you. And I will be up that way this week, this coming week, and I'll be up your way. I will give you a call later. Okay,
appreciate that. Yeah, Gerard told me you're going to be up, I think, on a Saturday or something. So
right. But definitely
he said he's going to try to get down to see. I'll see if I can't go with him.
Okay, but definitely everybody needs to check out that American Greed. Oh, my God. It even had where they're taking people's bones from the corpse, and they've been given transplants and stuff like that. Some of these people, they've been falsifying the documents of the cause of death. People may have died of cancer or HIV, and they're giving it to other people, so they have a big recall. It's so much mess going on, but it's really, that's really a part of our this class. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And the kidnapping of the kids, I mean, they had episodes on every single thing, and I said, my God, this is right on point on everything you've been teaching us.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Chris. Okay, let's go to our next caller, Terry from New Jersey. You got the mic. Go right here, Terry.
Hi, I was wondering about Brent's comments earlier about the slumlord lawyer and how they came to the decision that this judge, while he may have been involved in a crime, did not somehow violate the due process or constitutional rights, or whatever you want to call it, of this.
Are you talking about what Brent was mentioning with the judge that...
Yeah.
With the gun and the property. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think I heard Brent talk about it before. Maybe he might want to comment more on it and respond to you. But I'd like to just make one note here. Obviously, he shouldn't have put a gun to the guy's head, and that was a serious thing. And, you know, the judge should have sent it over to the prosecutor or actually to the sheriff. The sheriff should have done something. He should have become aware of it. If it was a federal court, of course, then it would have been sent over to the marshals or something. And because... Really, I think the grand jury should have been involved in that to consider the crime, and clearly that was a crime in my opinion. But apparently that didn't go anywhere for whatever reason. But anyway, Brent, do you want to further comment on that? Further expound? Let Terry further expound. I think I interrupted him. Terry, go right ahead. Finish expounding, and then Brent will respond.
Yeah.
just to say, if I'm being heard again, just to say that judges violate due process all day, every day, and have for decades. Judges make mistakes and violate due process. Judges violate due process on purpose. That doesn't mean you can sue them because they've acted within their judicial role. And the court in this case, the appellate court, I remember, said, it looks to us like this judge committed a crime. Now, I would have argued, and I'm sure the other side did, well, a crime is outside the scope of the judicial role. Well, that might be true. But the court made the point, and the reason I tell the story, it's an extreme story. Things like that don't happen every day, but I tell the story so that the hearer will remember how far judicial immunity can stretch. It can stretch real far. I've also told the story on the, I think on these presentations, about the judge back in 1850 in California that pulled a pistol during the proceedings when the sheriff tried to arrest him and told the sheriff he was going to blow a hole through his heart if he tried to arrest him during while court was in session, but he'd have to wait until the court was out of session. Well, the judge was right in that case, and the sheriff had no jurisdiction. Nobody has any jurisdiction to arrest a judge while he's holding court, no matter how crazy he acts. Unless he starts shooting people indiscriminately, I suppose somebody then would be justified, a marshal or a sheriff's deputy or a bailiff, to pull out a pistol and stop him. But again, the story is extreme. I don't say that it's the right, that the judgment was right, but I tell the story to impress upon folk how far the courts will go to grant immunity to a judge and say he's within his judicial discretion, even though he's nuttier than a fruitcake. That's what happens a lot in America. And cases of lesser egregious act of judges all the time happen where they're immune from suit, I should say, even though they were wrong in their decisions.
Well, what happened to this guy is a little extreme, but what happened to me is probably a lot more similar in that my father's estate was stolen under color of law by a judge in open court with the assistance of a corrupt prosecutor and a the Bergen County Bar Association president, who they appointed as administrator of the estate. See, what they do is now I had several siblings. They ran roughshod over their rights and appointed this guy, who then proceeded to milk the estate. And of course, I bring this to the appellate division, and they wipe their posterior with it. And I go on to the New Jersey Supreme Court, but of course they wouldn't take the case. I file suit in a civil rights suit, and of course they do the same thing, and they make up things in their opinion that weren't even, you know, the prosecutor didn't even say. And so basically it's all criminal conspiracy. I mean, you know, I don't know what they're waiting for, but, you know, this is only going to lead to bloodshed eventually. It's basically a criminal racketeering enterprise.
It's pandemic, and I've seen it also. And it gives real meaning to the words of Jesus Christ when he says to the courts of his day, those that administered the courts, you devour widows' houses. I've seen that done point blank, flatly, devouring widows' houses, stealing, targeting widows. Courts, along with local attorneys, targeting widows and taking all the real property, having them declared insane, getting conservatorship over them, and then liquidating their estates and dividing the money. That's what happens. That's right. And so I understand your point. But how? Here's the question then. How do you stop them? And the only way that I know you can stop them is that, as a matter of law, the simple first step is to try to have them impeached. Our legislators are not impeaching judges. They do have the right to do that. It's a common law responsibility, and they're not doing it. And it should be done often, very often, and keep those fellows on their toes and let them know that there's a limit to what of their power. right now they don't believe there is. To be a federal judge, for instance, is to have the power of a captain of a ship at sea over the people in your courtroom. That's a little much. And it's clearly out of hand, as we've been discussing about the case out in Las Vegas. And the defense lawyer being tased 3 times for asking a U.S. Marshal for a warrant to arrest his client. That's enough. Something ought to be done. The question is what? And the lawful answer, the first step, is to follow the law, follow due process. And that is tell legislators, congressmen, state legislators, if you don't clean these courts up, you're out of office. We're going to find somebody who will.
Wouldn't that be the responsibility of the grand jury rather than, you know, the impeachment process? Because some of these things are, I think, you're putting it in the hands of a lot of the people who appointed these judges in the first place.
Well, no, I suppose the grand jury could have a say in it. But clearly, at common law and the Constitution of the United States and many of the state governments, impeachment is the best-known process for getting rid of a judge. Now, if a grand jury indicts a judge, well, it doesn't work very well. It's easier to impeach a judge with a legislative body than it is to indict one with a grand jury. I think the history of our country has proven that. Not to say that you couldn't do it if you could make that happen. There was a time back in the 1920s, when runaway juries, as they used to call them, they called them runaway juries because they reminded people of a team of horses that was running and you couldn't stop them. And they were pulling a wagon or something behind them, and they were just running away without anybody holding the reins. And that's what grand juries used to do back in the 20s, and they got tired of prohibition, and they began to indict the prosecutors. And then they'd investigate the judge, and sometimes they'd try to indict him. And the reason prohibition stopped was not because Congress passed an amendment to stop it. It was because the juries in our country would no longer enforce it. And it was embarrassing to the government. They didn't know what to do, so they acted like they're the ones that ended it. Well, that's not the way it really happened. And the same thing can happen today, and that's the power of the jury in the United States. That's why the jury is the answer to our problems. And a grand jury, as you mentioned here, and the petit jury, criminals should be indicted and prosecuted. Hillary Clinton, if it is true what people say about her, that she's responsible for the deaths, and Bill Clinton, for treason, now we're facing a nuclear problem because it was all by design to get North Korea under the power of the World Bank. They probably aren't cooperating or something. So they said, well, we'll have Clinton sell nuclear capabilities, and then they'll have nuclear weapons. That'll give us an excuse to blow the country up like we've done other Arab countries and bring them under the World Bank, and the bankers can increase their wealth. All of these kind of these things, if they're true, the grand jury should try to indict them. If they get them indicted, due process should be followed. They should receive a fair trial by jury, and if they're convicted, they should be executed, not sent to jail. This stuff about sending these people to jail, that's hooey. That's not what the Constitution of the United States would require under its laws. Treason is a capital offense, has been for a long time. High treason is a capital offense. It's a capital offense among every people, even countries that say that they're too civilized to have capital punishment. Believe me, in those countries that say that, like France has in the past, they'll execute people for treason. Why? Because it's a capital crime. A capital crime is a crime that strikes at the foundation. It's a crime that a society believes strikes at its foundation, will destroy that people, that country. For those crimes, men are executed. But we've made capital crimes now for things that are nothing, absolutely nothing. And then we're sending people to jail. Forget all that. If due process is followed, if they're guilty of treason, that's a capital crime. But that's what should be done in those cases. And the juries can, of course, are useful. But still, I say, impeachment by the legislative branch is part of common law due process. And I'd like to see legislators take up their duties. They're not even trying. They don't even care. They're making too much money. That fell out in Nevada, that senator, whatever his name is, that wants the Bundys prosecuted because he's on land that could make him money because he wants to sell it or rent it to the Chinese. That's what that amounts to. He should be indicted for treason. The grand jury should indict him, but the prosecutors are comfy with him probably and in bed with him. That's the way that goes at the top.
Well, that indeed is the problem, no doubt. And I think we've come full circle in this. You know, look, I don't listen to Alex Jones too often, but today somebody sent me something and I started listening to it and I was really appalled by what I was hearing. And they had Roger Stone came on, was talking about the president, and you know, our president has been captured. He's almost, you can call, he's under house arrest almost, you can say. You know, if what they're reporting is true, and I got to believe that a good piece of what they're reporting is true, if not all of it, and I think that's the problem with our entire government. Why do judges continue to take the stance that they take and refuse to give us justice and refuse to follow the law? You know, they've been taught by the Bar Association, at least most of them have, if not, it probably is a required requirement to be a bar taught or be a bar lawyer. In order to become a judge, I doubt it that anybody that's not a bar lawyer could possibly become a judge, as far as the state judges are concerned and as federal judges. I may be wrong in that, but, you know, I think generally speaking, they try to keep a tight lid on things. And look, they got something on these people. I mean, why else would they go so far out on the limb? And some of them get so frightened, they recuse themselves because then they know they're going to get stuck in the court and they try to get out of there. But why did they just do the right thing? You know, why have to go through that whole process? And so, first of all, you know, there's a lot of money going on with all these judges and also all of our elected officials. A lot of them are either being under bribe, and a lot of them are probably blackmailed to make sure they do the right thing as far as the New World Order is concerned, do their right thing, the status quo. So how do you get this movement to go? So that's why Congress, you know, could never really would come around, at least I don't think they would, to impeach judges, which they should be doing. They should impeach all the federal judges, as far as I'm concerned. I haven't found one worth anything. Not to say they're not out there. We're looking for them, but it's pretty grim, from my opinion. Nevertheless, okay, we've come full circle. The people who are the jurists are captured jurists, you know, the grand jury, the trial jury. First of all juries are stacked, every single one of them. I can say that absolutely with the federal juries. They're all stacked juries. Just go read the jurist handbook. Go read the questionnaire, and anybody with any kind of common sense realizes what's going on when you read those documents. It's just unbelievable, the questions that they ask, the knowledge that they have. The fact that they can decide on what jurist is going to sit on a case and not sit on a case. I mean, sure, there are certain questions that jurists need to be asked. Do you know these people? Do you have knowledge of this case? Those kind of things, you know, where it's obvious. You want to get that person to know. You want to know if that person has any connection to the case. But, you know, look, if someone sees a bias, you know, on one side or the other, fine. They bring it up and the jurist is rejected. But other than that, I don't know. How can they go about just deciding this whole thing is just a stacked process so they get the results that they want in the end? You also have ignorant people, and I speak of myself first. You know, we're ignorant until we start to educate ourselves, to become aware of these things and start to see how things work and understand the process, to understand that, hey, we the people, we can indict these guys. And through indictment, remove them from office, put them in jail. And I agree with Brent. That's my opinion also. The death penalty is the way to go with these people. It is subversion. These are the enemies of liberty, the enemies of the people, the enemies of the Constitution. Of course, you know, that's up to the jury to decide that. It's up to the jury whether they're going to give mercy. But they need to have the knowledge. The fact is that the people don't have the knowledge. They're not giving the powers and the authorities that they truly have. People think that they themselves as a jury have to follow the law, that the judge, wait a second, you are the law. You know, just go into the Bill of Rights. We are the law. We the people make the law. We decide. You know, and even if the person's guilty, we can let them go. Maybe we would say, hey, if I was in that situation, I probably would have done the same thing. You know, it's up. But, of course, on the other side of that coin, you know, if there's an injured party there, which generally there must be in order for a crime to be committed, you know, you have to restore the individual. But, yeah, you know, they don't know that they can indict judges. People don't know these things. That's what we're doing here, trying to educate the people to come to a realization and understanding that we can take these people out of office. Now, we're having a tough time doing it. it is an uphill battle. And if people don't have the patience, then shame on you. Once you get into the battle, stick on it to the end. Let's get this job done, you know. And it's going to be an uphill battle because time goes by and a year goes by and 2 years goes by and 3 years goes by and you say, oh, we haven't gotten nowhere yet. Wait a second. Look to see what's going on, at least what we're doing. What we're doing, we are constantly advancing, constantly. No matter how much it looks like we are being set back, we are advancing. Anybody who's reading our papers, understanding our process of what we are trying to do, our plan, our strategy, okay, they would see we are advancing. And right now, this paper in the court, look at the fact that this chief judge walked into the courtroom, stole the gavel away from the magistrate of the court, which was the authority, which was the administrator of the court to perform the authority and the will of the people. That would be the grand jury as prosecutors in this case, not necessarily to prosecute the case, but to bring the case to the prosecutor and to indict and the trial jury to make the decision on what's going to happen. And here this judge just waltzes into the court, takes his gavel, whacks it down and says, case dismissed. I mean, hey, that is proof of our case. He's building our case for us. He's putting nails in his own coffin. Okay, we've responded back in ways they'd never even dreamt that we would. Nobody has responded the way we've responded. And this last paper we sent, now we put the magistrate, who has been very, very quiet, hasn't said a darn thing since the case began. Okay, and now we put him on the spot. His head is now in the guillotine, and he is either going to drown with the rest of them, or he's going to stand up and do the right thing. And I think he's shaking his boots, and he should be. But he's got to stand up, and there's a fear standing up against these people, and there's a fear going against us. So this guy is stuck between a rock and a hard place, but guess what? He's there. He took that position. He now has to make a decision. And we, the people, need to make a decision, too. I'm sure we're going to get an indictment on this guy should he not go forward and obey the writ of mandamus that we just sent him. He better sign those papers. He better make sure that this case goes forward. And he needs to stop all of these crimes that are taking place in the courtroom where he sits as administrator of that court. And I don't feel sorry for the guy. Because this is the job he chose. He knew what he was getting into. He knows what's the game. He knows what's going on. And he wants to play. Well, now you're playing. Now you're coming into our sandbox. And we have a lot we could do. We got 94 other federal district courts to go to. We also, you know, more than that. I mean, look at each, 94 federal district courts. I mean, there's a lot more courts per se. But there are 94 federal district courts. We only went into one. Well, it's nothing for us to move over to another federal district because of the corruption and make the point on the corruption moving into the court and put another judge on the line. We got 94 courts we can move through. And we will do it. And I realized since the last time we spoke about this, we don't need to put up that $400 every time. First of all, we shouldn't have to put anything up. We want our money back. And that's the first order of business we need to get to as soon as we can get things going into court. We want our money back. Okay? You don't charge us for justice. But nevertheless, we're going to move from one court to another because there's corruption in the court. There shouldn't be a problem with that. We're going to move for cause from one court to another court. And that cause, of course, is corruption. But the people can indict. We can put them in jail. We can put them on death row. We can do what we, the people, need and have to do. And, of course, every case is on its own, has to be decided and considered by the people. And a lot of this, these people would escape, will escape it, because we're constantly giving them, you know, the olive branch. You know, hey, you know, do the right thing, and we're not going to pursue you from this position, you know, coming after you for subversion. Because we need these people to turn and do the right thing. We need to convince them, and we're willing to let it go. Because, look, if we're not going to let it go, at the end we're going to be putting a lot of people in jail or a lot of people to death because they're all guilty, every one of them. And we're not just going to stop at the judges either. You know, you go to all the other elected individuals in Congress on both the state and the federal level, they're just as guilty. They're all participating in the same subversion against the people, an assault, subversion against the Constitution, subversion against the United States of America. They're all guilty of the same thing. You know, we can't possibly go and put them all, you know, to put them all in jail or to go to that kind of a process. So we're kind of hoping that these people, maybe when the ground moves finally, you know, and the flow of people come in, and some of the people that are in power may start to do the right thing, we'll live with that. We have to live with that because we got to go forward. But it's those hardcore individuals that really are the cause of the whole thing, the real evil ones, they'll never go along with this because they know that there's so many skeletons in their closet. They're not going to get away with it. And they're going to go down. And whatever it is that the people decide to do, the people will decide to do it. This is not up to me or you, or any one individual. This is up to the people. And so we have come full circle. We are educating the people of jury nullification. We are educating the people on the knowledge of the fact that you make the law. You decide what needs to be done. And we don't listen to statutes. We don't listen to judges. Because once the judge turns up and starts to talk about, you could decide on the facts, but here's the law, and you got to follow these statutes and do this, that, and the other thing, forget about it. That guy, that's tampering with the jury. You know, what prosecutor, and this is why that judge was never prosecuted probably, is because no prosecutor would jump up to do anything about it. They're protecting each other. It's just the same old, same old. You know, Brent made a point a little earlier. We spoke about this before. I thought it was a Benjamin Franklin quote. I think it is, but whoever came up with it, you know, or maybe it was even Jefferson. I don't remember, but it was one of our founding fathers, I believe, his quote, you know, when the people fear the government, you have tyranny. When the government fear the people, you have liberty. And that's where we need to bring this thing and never allow it to be anything else than the fear of the people by those people who we've graced with power by whatever source. Either we've elected them or we elected individuals who appointed them. We graced them with power. We gave them authority. And they have this power to speak. You know, it annoys me to no end when these people get up there, the IRS or some other commission or a group of government officials from this office or that office or from the FBI, and they come up and they say, you know, well, we refuse to answer the grounds that I may be incriminated. That's fraud. Put them in jail. Indict them right there. They have a duty to speak. They have power. They have authority. We give it to them, and now they're using that power and authority to abuse it, to abuse the people. And then they try to say, well, they don't have to speak. I can be silent. No, you cannot be silent. You want to remain silent, that's fine. Move over. Let's get the person behind you. You get up, and you answer the question now. And each and every one of them needs to be indicted for fraud, because silence, when you have a duty to speak, is indeed fraud. And when we get to the bottom line of what it's all about, I'm sure the crime is even greater. It gets back to subversion, no matter what you do. You know, the last couple FBI agents, what do they call them, directors? I mean, they're guilty. Just look what happened on their watch. Look at all the evil, the 9/11. Look what went out with Lavoie Finnegan, you know? These two guys, Comley, what's the other one? I forget his name. These two guys are as guilty as sin themselves. This happened on their watch. You can't tell me you didn't know about it. There's no way you can tell me you didn't know about it. The cover-up goes right on to the top. We the people are not that dumb, are we? But all we have to do is start asking questions and start chiseling away and start to get some power and a little bit of authority and start to get some clout in the court and the leverage and start moving forward, and the whole thing's going to open up. They won't be able to hide it then. Once we crack that can, that's it. It's open. And they can no longer, because truth has a way of finding itself. Lies become obvious. Contradictions is the proof of guilt. When you constantly get this contradiction here, you said that, they said, what happened here? You know, they just contradict each other. It'll be all figured out, it'll all be exposed, but it's up to the people to have the endurance, up to the people to maintain, going forward and doing what we have to do. We've been at this for quite some time. Personally, I've been at this going back to 2000, 2001. I think it was 2000. And, of course, we didn't get into the court process until maybe 5 or 6 years ago, as far as moving, I think it was 5 years ago, we started moving towards the grand jury processes. Before that, we were in the courts and we were trying to get the political process straightened out. It was an impossibility. No way can you straighten out that political process. You need to put people in jail to fix that problem. And that's why we realized we had to move into the courts. And then we moved into the courts, we realized, whoa, wait, we have to move into the grand jury and the people, because that's the real power and the real authority. We got to get the common law courts going. We got to get the whole country involved. We got to go to every county, and we did. We went to every county and gave it to the people. And all you need is one person to step up. But people came to these meetings and they said, yes, we want the common law back. We do want things back to where it belongs and the power of a free grand jury, an uncontrolled people. And we've established ourselves in every single state. So we have authority. We have standing. We built this thing prop, and it took time. We've lost a lot of people on the way, but we've gained a lot of people, too. Some people just couldn't stay on with it, you know, after 2, 3, 4 years. Oh, you guys ain't doing it again. They weren't paying attention because we were constantly succeeding. We were constantly moving forward. We never were pushed backwards. Ever were we ever pushed backwards in any of the things we're doing in the courts. Not once. And we only really started filing in the courts in a specific way with an extraordinary process, really, since it was December 14th, I think, was the first paper we filed. And we did file other papers prior to that, which were informations as a grand jury. We've been doing that for a couple of years now, or at least a year. Well, yeah, probably 2 years. But then we consolidated all of that into one court case that began in December 14, 2016. And we have hundreds of papers that we have filed into the courts. We have reports of crimes, studies that we filed in the courts that we haven't even done indictments on yet. But people need to study those crimes, and because there's a lot of information. Because if they're going to stand on the grand, if they're going to sit on the grand jury to make a decision to indict, they have to go through all that evidence. And we'll talk about more of that maybe next week. But in any event. You know, we the grand jury, we the people, through the power and the authority of the grand jury, let's go back to the Magna Carta, you know. The Magna Carta lays it right out. The 25 will fix the problems. We're not going to permit the people to be beaten up and destroyed by our government. We 25 will stop it. And back in those days, in 1215, they took an axe, they pulled the king off on the side of the road, they put it to his head and said, we're going to fix the problem right here. Sign the paper or we take your head. That was extreme, of course. They repented of that. They rewrote some of that and said that they would never, take the lives of the king and the family and so on and so forth. But we'll take your houses. We'll take your castles. We'll take your kingdom. And that's what we need to do. We need to take these people out of power and authority, and we need to deliver them up to the jury. That's what we need to do. All right, anyway, Gerard, are you here? Hello, Gerard. Maybe I should question if I'm here. I hear something out there. All right, we'll take our next caller. Terry, are you done?
Yeah, I just want to add one quick thing here. For anybody who's interested in this criminal conspiracy that goes from municipal court all the way up to New Jersey Supreme Court and the Third Circuit, they can go to my site. It's called cleanupthecourts.blogspot.com. That's plural, clean up the courts. And that's all I had to say. I yield.
Okay, thank you, Terry. Okay, we'll move to our next caller. Let's see, we have... a 912 number. Maybe you give us your first name and your state. 912. And Gerard, are you here? I see you're muted, but want to pass the control.
Yeah, I'm here. I couldn't my mute button. I don't know what was going on.
All right. Well, I'm going to pass the controls in a minute or two to you.
Okay.
You want to take them? Let me just take the next caller. 912. Give us your first name and your state, please.
My name is James Buchanan in Georgia.
How you doing, James in Georgia? Go right ahead.
pretty good. You seem to be earlier on a topic that is near and dear to me, and that's the separation of powers. Most people think about separation of powers, and they think about it strictly in the realm of the state. But if we really go back in history, we really see that the main separation of powers occurred in the early Middle Ages. We call it the separation of church and state. That is the separation of the legal authority, which was vested in the state, and the moral authority, which was vested in the church. And we have to keep these two separate. And in many ways, what you're speaking of really touches on the topic. We see that, you know, when we're having a criminal trial, the verdict of guilty or not guilty, it's not about its legality. It's about morality. In a very real sense, in a criminal trial, you literally have the state, which is prosecuting on legality, and the trial, the jury coming back and giving a verdict which speaks to the morality of the act and not its legality. It's a very complicated series of...
Well, you know, I kind of agree to some degree with you, but remember, a lot of these juries, they're suffocated by these statutes and codes that the judge says you got to go by, you know. If we can prove, or if the prosecutor can prove that they broke that code or broke that statute, then you got to find them guilty, and we got to give them 30 years, or whatever it is. I mean, some of these things are ridiculous. But the jury needs to understand that they don't have to abide by that, number one, and you can't hold a person to a statute, number two. Statutes are not for us. Statutes are for elected individuals and appointed individuals, bureaucrats, people who are employed by the government. That's what statutes are for. Yeah. Statutes are also for certain businesses, commercial businesses. You know, we've laid this all out in Article 1 of the Constitution. But, you know, I'd like to say, you know, one of the things we've seen the most recently that really annoyed me, and we even wrote a paper and sent it to the president concerning this, is when the president decided he was going to protect the people, and then some courts came up, one court came up and another court came up saying, oh, you can't do that. It was clear in the authority of the president, it was clear that he has the right and the authority to refuse people access into the country and the ability to be able to protect our borders, okay? That's his job, okay? And we sent, you know, Jefferson had this problem, and we sent a paper to the president and told the president and referred back to Jefferson, and when he had this problem, he ignored the courts. Because they have no power or authority over him, and he's exercising what he knows to be his power and his authority. And the court should not be able, this president should understand that. That is a problem of the ages, really. It's a problem because we're all ignorant, and this president is just as ignorant as we are. Hopefully he's getting an education. But nevertheless, the president should have thumbed his nose at the federal court and say, you can go do whatever you want, but I'm going forward and put the order out. And do it, okay? Because that was his look. At he had a duty to do that. As a matter of fact, he should not have. He really violated his own oath. Ultimately, ignorantly too, I believe, but he violated his own oath by just hesitating and waiting, and allowing the court to push him around. But you know, I'm sure he had an army of lawyers telling him that these people are crazies, you know. But go ahead.
I mean, I wish Trump would have, like I said, threaded the needle, said, okay, you think I can't. The Constitution, I think, clearly says that I can. I'm just going to leave it up to the discretion of my officers to decide which way they're going to go. And this would have thrown...
It is clear. You know what? You know what else? You know what else?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we don't have the ability to push this forward yet, but we're working on it, and we have got one indictment in. But you know what? That judge that made that decision is committed the essence of what fraud on the court actually is. The law is so crystal clear. Anybody that just has the ability to read a sixth grade reading level or you know, would have been able to read that law that the president brought up many times and his representative has brought up many times, and it is just crystal clear. There's nothing to debate here. So this judge clearly, not was in error. He wasn't in error. He was committing fraud on the court. He was guilty, ultimately, in my opinion, of subversion by trying to move the court to prevent the, and he succeeded for a while, and another judge, you know, to prevent the president from doing his duty.
Well, I like the way you put it, in that the laws of Great Britain and the United States were set up so that everybody could basically nullify one another, that nothing could actually positively be done by one. It had to take a large majority in order to get something done.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way that this that structure is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the way my mind works. I see structure. I see, I mean, I'm great as a mechanic, but the structure to me is so important, because the structure goes beyond any individual or party faction. You've got to keep that structure in place, separate the moral and the legal authority from one another, because once they become one, if the church itself has legal and moral authority, you have a theocracy. And if the state obtains all the legal and the moral authority, you have statism. You have to keep a balance.
Well, it does go to the extreme on the other side, too, because, look, absolutely, church and state needs to be separated. There's no doubt about that. But separating of a godly man or a man that you might call religious man, because he's a godly individual and believes in morality and believes whatever he believes, you can't separate that person's belief and exercise of government from what he's doing in the office, because we are a Christian nation to begin with. And ultimately, we're biblical. The church is one thing, and the true church of God, of course, ultimately is the body of believers. You know, one here, one there, and a few over here, and a few over there, collectively. And God knows who his church really is. But that brick building down on the corner often is a problem. You know, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against spiritual wickedness in the high places. And that's talking about the churches. You want to find the devil, go to church. That's where you're going to find him. And I tell you, I've been to church over the year, 30 years and better, okay, and constantly finding the devil, and finding the devil has control over so many of these churches. These people are so lost. Once in a while, you find good people here and good people there, but it's so hard and far and in between to find. It really is. That's my impression, anyway. Maybe it's just my neighborhood. I don't know.
Well, what I've found in churches is that usually whatever the hot-button topic is for the pastor, that is the issue that's running rampant in the congregation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Look, an individual who is a pastor really feeding the flock looks out and knows the people. He knows what he needs to preach because he knows the people. And he really should be building up, edifying the body of Christ, edifying the church, you know. Edifying the body of Christ ultimately is the point, okay. But pastors, maybe because they're schooled or something, I don't know. I just don't understand. They go a different direction. They follow the church status quo of whatever their denomination is, I guess, and they just get lost, you know. But
John,
that gets complicated.
Yeah.
John.
Yeah, go ahead. You want to comment? Go right ahead, Brent.
Yeah, real quick. I appreciate the caller's comments also, and he raises, again, this is a fundamental question, and these are the things we need to be thinking about. And I've contended for a long time, and I still believe it. We live in a fiction in America, a fiction. It is not true. It is not true that government can exist without religion. All government is founded upon religion.
Amen.
And on all sides, our common law and the practitioners of it have always said that Christianity, the Bible itself, the Blackstone says this in his first volume, Christianity and the Bible lie at the foundation of our common law. The foundation, not a part of our common law. And Justice Joseph Story of the United States Supreme Court said the same thing, and he said it strongly. And it is true. It is impossible to have government without a lawgiver. And our response to the ultimate lawgiver, the true lawgiver, we call religion. That's true among every person, every tribe, every tongue, every nation, on every continent, and every age. It's never changed. Whoever we set up for ourselves as the final arbiter of right and wrong in individual instances, from whose decision there is no meaningful appeal, is lawgiver. And that lawgiver is known, we call it in Anglo-Saxon, a god. A god. That's why the Bible says that the jurors of Israel were gods, little g, because there was no meaningful appeal on the human level from the decision, as there isn't here. And we, in America, have been a Christian nation. Not by official decree, but then again by official decree. Our Declaration of 76 says it. If we don't believe it, just go look at the military cemeteries in France or in America, and look at the thousands and thousands of crosses. That's our acknowledgement, even if a person doesn't believe that the cross is the true Christian symbol, and it probably isn't, but nonetheless, it was our understanding and our acknowledgement that Jesus Christ, his decrees, his law, lie at the foundation of our nation. And if we don't have an ultimate lawgiver, a force outside of this puny human system of government, whereby this government may be limited, then we live in tyranny. And if we have chosen, for whatever reason, or God has given to us, Christianity. We went to war with Japan because they murdered a bunch of us, and they said our God demands that we bring all of the world under the 14 corners of our religion. And if we have to kill people to do it, like you, that's what we're going to do. We said our God doesn't believe that and doesn't tell us that, and so we have two choices. If we can't get far enough away from you, we're going to have to kill you before you kill us. War, by definition, is a religious activity. It always has been. This talk about, well, the worst wars are religious wars. No, all war is religious. Listen, when men go to kill one another, they're doing what deeply drives them from the deepest heart of their hearts. I must kill another person, or he'll destroy me. That's a religious activity. Of course, it stands to reason. If you're truly a Christian, if you truly believe God is sovereign, and your God is the God of gods, the maker of heaven and earth, then there's nothing that you do that is not religious activity. That was the believer. That was the belief, by the way, of those that founded our country. Almost to a man, there wasn't anybody that denied the Christian religion. It was blasphemy in most states at that time. Blasphemy as a crime. It was a crime to speak demeaningly of the God of the Bible or of the Bible. No, I'm not promoting that idea. I'm just acknowledging the fact. The facts of history cannot be denied. They belong to us. And it is true that Christianity, by a critical mass, unspoken in, or unofficially spoken in many ways, has provided the foundation of our country. And if we lose Christianity, the onslaught of false lawgivers is upon us. I don't want to live under the law of Allah. I much prefer the law of Jesus Christ. I don't want to live under the law of the Pope of Rome. I much prefer the canon law, in other words. I much more prefer the law of Jesus Christ. I do not want to live under the law of the false gods of Babylonian Judaism. I much rather prefer the law of Jesus Christ, and I'm right in doing that. And we need to be saying that. And if we aren't going to say it, the vacuum will be filled with the hellacious, monstrous law of those systems. They destroy countries. They destroy people. They destroy everything. They destroy hope. They destroy wealth. They destroy families. They promote sex perversion. Look at those systems. That's what they promote. They've always promoted it. That's nothing new. But now we say no. It's time to say no. We're going to establish the law of the true lawgiver, as James says. Whether we do it officially or unofficially, it makes no difference. And law, by nature, I would also contend, is by nature moral. It can't be anything else. Law and morality are inseparable. Either you have the right law. If you have the right law, you have the right mores. If you have the wrong law, and your law says you must murder Christian people, slit their throats, and rape their wives on top of them, as the Islamic people do, well, you've got the wrong law. So it's time to fish or cut bait, and it's time to say what true law is. That's our problem. We haven't been saying that. And we like to talk about the Constitution of the United States. That's not enough. The Constitution of the United States is a brief of common law government with a long centuries of history behind it in support of it, and it arose out of the scriptures. It's compatible with it. It is the laws of nature, which our Declaration 76 speaks. the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things. That's our common law. And the laws of nature of God written in the Bible. That's what Blackstone tells us that phrase means, writing 11 years before our Declaration of 76. That's what the Scottish Enlightenment tells us it means. That's what John Locke, a fan of the Scottish Enlightenment, tells us that phrase means. That's our fundamental law. Well, back to you, John. Thanks for allowing
amen.
Me to respond.
Thank you, Brent. Well, amen. And there is a difference between following God and following a church. And, you know, churches often are the problems. We have to be as careful with churches as we do with government, you know, with government officials. But amen. You know, the Word of God is the law, ultimately. And we called upon the Creator in the Declaration of Independence and made a covenant. In my opinion, from what I see, we made a covenant with God. We, a people, made a covenant with God and that through the Declaration of Independence. And then we sealed up the law through the common law, but with the Constitution. You know, the Constitution is the law that governs our government. That's ultimately what the Constitution is. And also, of course, the Bill of Rights or the Bill of Prohibitions, you know, that ultimately is saying, letting the government know you do not do anything that violates any of these things. And this isn't all of it. There's more, you know. And I think it made it quite clear. And so we do have a really, really good law system you know, provided here through the Constitution and the common law. The problem is we're all ignorant to it. And unless Jefferson said, you know, if people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. Forget about it. You can't have liberty and be ignorant of what liberty is. How can you defend that which you do not understand? How can you protect that which you don't know, you know? And people unfortunately don't know. I thought I knew before I started to read these things. I thought I knew what liberty, what freedom was. I really didn't have a clue when I found out what it was. But anyway, Gerard, let me pass things over to you. I'll keep my hands off the buttons. Anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 to get into the queue. Gerard?
Okay. So, looks like we have Felicia as the next questioner. Go ahead, Felicia, from Florida.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, just to call. I'm actually on the phone right now because I have some internet access, so I'm charging the phone right now there.
You're kind of echoing. It's a little hard to hear. Go ahead. Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're a little muffled, but go ahead. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Oh, now I can. There you go.
Okay, I was just listening to the conference call. I'm on Rome right now because I'm in Florida and I have no internet access or anything on my phone. So
okay,
I'm kind of being charged for it. But I was just listening to the call, and one thing I have to say, the part where I heard someone saying that they're evading the courts, the judges, you know, they're evading the grand jury. They see the grand jury as their enemy. They see the people as their enemy. And they're just pretty much going against God. And personally, I think that's why God was taken out of the courts and the schooling system, because they don't want people to actually know who God is, and I think that we need to look within ourselves. And I mean, you know, here I am, I'm about to be, you know, homeless, and I was listening to the call about the law of the land and how they want the property of the land, and I'm being evicted from a landlord without a contract.
Exactly.
So, you know, when I, you know, read the grand jury's paperwork, you know, I'm like, wait, they're doing exactly what they said they was going to do. And they're doing it, and it's unlawful.
It is.
But there's a lot I can say, and I was actually waiting to hear back from, you know, based on the last call, to hear back, you know, about what really I needed to do, and I haven't yet received that call, and, you know, I'm still waiting on that.
Okay.
But in the end, you know, one more thing. I'm not going to be long. When talking about the law of the land, and this is just what I'm feeling right now from listening to the call, when talking about the law of the land and how the foreigners came to shore to the United States of America, and there's many treaties out there. As you know, there's many treaties. We can call them contracts, but they're treaties amongst other countries and other things. But it's funny how I'm here in Florida. I went through Hurricane Irma last night. And to find out that all the water in Tampa, Florida, in the Bahamas, in France, they went back out to sea, even the fish and all the sea life. And these things are being talked about. They've been talked about for thousands of years, and it's in the book of Revelation. And I think it's in Luke as well. When the sea recedes out. And I know you guys are all Christian guys. I know this. This is why I'm here. But I know that, you know, the words that were spoken before us is our future, and our future is our task. And until we can come to grips with that and actually know who and what God is, it's on an individual basis.
And well, that there, I think, is the key. That is the key. You know, our
once all of us come together as one, once all of us come together as one, I personally think that's the only way that we're going to be able to stop the criminals in the courts.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's exactly, you know, I heard you say that you were kind of waiting on something. I'm presuming you're going through a non-judicial foreclosure and you're waiting to hear back from some of the people that you've filed some paper with. Is that what you're waiting for?
Well, she's waiting for us to tell her what to do at this point because they gave
her... Yeah, but I mean, are you going through a non-judicial foreclosure, you know, with the mortgage company foreclosing or the tax foreclosure?
It was a non-judicial foreclosure. I already filed the paperwork with you guys back
right.
in May, and I actually
right.
filed it on my birthday, and now,
right.
you know.
Right, and we're trying to push that through. And by the way, the paper that we just filed today, I mean on Friday, which they received today, we're giving the judge 20 days to make a move, okay? And if he does do the right thing, then that's the next set of papers we're going to be sending for his signature. And that is the defaults on all these judges. And we're going to start moving towards indictments on these judges because they're all committing a crime and participating in RICO, removing the land for money, ultimately. You know, look at what we are doing is the godly thing, the right thing. We're trying to bring God back into the court. And that's why I feel so strong about what we're doing, and that's why I feel we're going to be successful. Most likely, anyway, be successful. Either that or Judgment Day is very close by, you know, one or the other. You know, that's my opinion anyway. But, you know, we're bringing God back to the court. I mean, what greater battle can you have than to bring God back into the courts of a nation that's supposed to be a godly or a Christian nation? What greater cause can a man have? You know, what greater thing can you do? And if we're doing the right thing and we have a good relationship with the Lord as far as trying to do the right thing in our own personal lives, which we all should be trying to do our best, and in fighting this battle, this is all up to God. We can't possibly win against these people. When I look at the enemy to see and understand what kind of control they have over this nation, the control they have over the entire world, and how long they've had control, okay, I mean, it's just mind-boggling, at least when I look at it, it's like overwhelming. We just can't defeat these people. But God can, and that's the key. You know, we're the David and Goliath thing. We're David, and we believe, and we're going to take that one little stone, and we're going to take them down, okay? And
there's a man who
God is, then that's when they will kneel.
That's right. So I think this whole thing at one point, you know, it's we're trusting in God to deliver us from this. And it may not be the way we think to be delivered. You know, again, it may be a whole different story the way we get delivered. And I'm talking about the people just trying to get what's right back into our courts and back into our lives and back into our nation, you know, just trying to do the right thing. And again, you know, what greater cause than to bring God back into his court? This is his court. Again, go back to the Declaration of Independence. We covenant with God right there. And
yep.
The court is his, not ours, not mine, not yours. I'm not the king of the court. You know, I may be sitting on the king's bench as a jurist, as a grand jurist or a trial jurist, and I got to represent his will. And I got to know right from wrong to represent that will. And
okay.
And so it's his will, it's his law, not ours. The Constitution is part of that law also, because we have the right to create our government and control that government. We ordained and we established this Constitution for them. And all of that together is the law of the land. And so that's why I feel so confident, and that's why I feel at some point in time, you know, we're going to hit that critical mass. People, you know, God even made the dumbass to speak, you know. How much more can he make these dumbasses in court, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to trust in him to do what has to be done. And again, it may be something different than we're even thinking. But we see the battle before us, and we go forward and fight that battle and then wait for God to do whatever he's going to do.
Yes, sir. You know, I want to say something that I had wrote a few years ago. I've spoken to plenty of people, but I want to speak it here. Is it okay?
Yeah, yeah.
You ready?
Yep.
I am a phoenix. I am a phoenix because my mother had me. Father gone so much to the point we barely seen him. He was gone so much until he couldn't see the wonderful woman I became to be. As a kid, I remember crying in the back seat on the floor at his funeral when he was no more. Playing hopscotch on a pavement with rocks using pieces of glass, had to create more what people call ghetto games, but that's all we had. All we had was our imagination and to speak the truth, trying to respect others because it's the right thing to do. Knocking on doors and running and later playing kickball, I was too young to see. She was the most important thing of all. I'm a phoenix. I think I forgot. Then I turned to see a cheap replica in my house from a garage sale and not store-bought. How did it get there? How could it be? As I remember, my mother bought it for me. I see the phoenix sun every morning rising in the east, try to get a glimpse of a bird, which was in this time rarely seen. As I encounter people that try to deter, remind, shape, and help mold me, I am who I am. I am me. I'm a phoenix because that's how my mother raised me. And I came from the womb, and so did everybody else on this call. We came from the womb of the mother. We came from the matrix, and the matrix means womb. We all came from the universe. For we are all connected, no matter what race, creed, color, what we're fighting for on this planet. This planet doesn't belong to us, it belongs to God. God created everything. You can mow the grass tomorrow. I mow my grass today, right after the Hurricane Irma. It's going to grow. It's going to grow. The tree's going to grow. The little bird outside, you know, the little bells is in my tree. You know, the wind knocked his nest off, and he was on my front porch, like, coming up to me, and I'm like, I know what happened, you know? So we have to connect that with nature, because nature is God. And the planet has been going on for centuries and centuries. It's been destroyed, it's been resurrected, it's been destroyed. These are the generations that come and pass, and we, as individuals, and it's just me, have to recognize the fact that there is only one creator, and that is who we need to find. And when we find that, that is the only way we're going to find love, compassion, and liberty.
Well,
and
I only
the only way we're going to be free. That's the only way we're going to be free.
Well,
it's no crime.
Amen. Amen. And I'd like to just make just one correction here, though, that, you know, nature is not God, but nature reflects God. And,
yep.
You know, we read in the Declaration of Independence, nature's God. So God is, of course, created nature and the nature of this world and this universe and so on. So,
yep.
But,
yep.
But amen. Amen. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, and we'll go to our next caller. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Gerard.
All right.
Anybody wants to get into the queue, star six?
Hello.
Is that Jim from New York, I think, is there? Gerard, are you here?
Oh, yeah.
Gerard?
I'm talking to him, and I'm muted.
Oh, well, how dare you mute yourself while you're
talking. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, Jim.
From the great state of confusion up there in New York.
You can say that again. What's going on?
So I get people time to time, you know, because I'm working on these show funds, and they want to know when are we going to file defaults. And so I went in and looked at some dates, and it looks like we got 90 days plus on a few of these. They were filed like June 6th.
Yeah, we are ready to start move for some defaults, I believe. You know, just that other things were happening. We had to deal with those things first, and we have to push this this magistrate to make a move one way or the other. But we're going to start with the defaults, no matter how which way this magistrate goes. We're going to start with the defaults soon. We also want to get moving. I know we've got quite a few non-judicial foreclosure papers that are in the works. So I want to kind of meet up with everyone, or at least the leadership on this, and see if we're ready to rock and roll. Jen, maybe you can make some kind of a meeting with just the leadership on this, maybe tomorrow or the next day. Try to do it off the fly, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, we'll try.
Okay, now let's get that moving. But, yeah, we are ready to file. We're past some of these. We're past the time period. We can file the defaults.
Yeah, Thursday would be a nice night for me.
No. You know.
Anyway,
all right. Well, we'll try to get something going as soon as possible on that. Anyway, let me pass it back to Gerard. Well, go ahead, Jim.
Okay. The other thing that I was wondering was, I mean, we're really not stymied here, but for the past 3 years, we've been filing these things and indicting judges here and there, and it doesn't do what we want it to do. So what I was wondering is isn't there a way that the judicial department should actually recuse themselves from this altogether, seeing as we're charging them with these crimes now?
Yeah, we got to think of a way that we could do that. We need to brainstorm on how we would go about doing it. It's an interesting concept, but how we would execute it in reality, you know, we'd have to think about that, because I often think about something of that nature. But look, we've indicted 9 judges, and that was back, what, 4 years ago or something, Gerard? It was quite some time ago, maybe 3 years ago.
Yeah,
I don't
probably
remember.
4 years, I'll bet.
Yeah, we did it all at the same time, and we indicted them, and we got nowhere. Not that we expected to get anywhere per se, but we had hope, and we thought that we put the pressure on. But the New York was just so locked down and closed up. And then we realized, of course, it's the federal where we really got to get going here. And so we've only indicted one person so far. That's one judge, and that's this judge here. What's his name? Lawrence?
Kahn. Yeah.
Huh?
Mr. Kahn.
Yeah, Lawrence Kahn. And so he's the only one we've indicted so far. We need to consider an indictment for the clerk, okay? I'm talking about the chief clerk. We've already did a show cause, and they didn't even answer that. And we commanded them to do the right thing, and they didn't. So I think we need to consider an indictment on that clerk. And then once we start doing the defaults on these judges, I think we need to move right into indictments. Now, it's okay if an indictment sits. Look, it's sitting in the court. As long as the indictment is sitting there, we don't have the prosecutors to work with yet. You know, depending on Jeff Sessions. But, you know, with what I'm learning today, it's going to be a more difficult battle with Jeff Sessions than I thought, because he's the enemy. I believe he's the enemy. And I'll tell you what, his actions prove to me that he is the enemy. He knows what's going on. He knows what's happening. There's no way he cannot know what's happening. And what I'm hearing that's going on with the administration and his, in President Trump's administration and all the enemy has surrounded him, so to speak. His administration is full with the enemy. I'm wondering if he's getting our papers anymore. But look, we get back to critical mass, get back to doing the right thing. This is God's battle, ultimately. It's not really ours. It's God's battle. Because this is a spiritual battle, no matter how you go about it. It's about the law of God, you know. So, you know, it's his battle. It's up to him. We're going to expect him to do what needs to be done. We want to come over that hill and get ready to come down in the battle, and they're all going to be laying dead down there, you know. I forget which story it is in the Bible. We've brought that up quite some time ago. We mentioned that story where Israel came up. God told Israel to go out, and they knew they were going to get slaughtered. They didn't have a chance. But God told them to do it, so they went to do it. And as they came over the mountain, over the hill, lo and behold, the enemy was all laid out, dead. God turned them against each other. And that's how they were defeated.
You know, all that aside, I mean, I remember a couple of years back when we had problems up there in New York, in Columbia County, and we indicted some people there, some judges there, and then we went all throughout the state and we asked them to come and rescue their brethren because they were in bad behavior, and it didn't make it. And then we went to the federal level. Isn't that true? Or am I...
Well, that's true. I forgot. We did go after a few judges up in Greene County.
We really gave them all a chance to rescue their friend, and they never, you know, their brethren, and they never did. And
those indictments are valid, by the way. They're all valid. And we're going to bring them into the federal court.
We do Mr. Khan, we should ask them to come to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then, if they say, well, what are you doing? Asking the Judicial Department to recuse themselves, you know, what are we going to do? So, listen, we can handle this right from the King's Bench. You know, we only came over to get
you. Well, you know what? Why don't we try to talk about the reality of that? Maybe we can get a day to come together with a few of us that are interested in discussing that to see how we would make that a reality. Because that's a big task, what you're saying. And I've often thought of that, too. How could you go about doing it? I don't know.
Well, I would say the whole show cause to every judge, and then once that's done, then we have it on record that they refuse to answer.
What was that?
That's a good one.
Yeah. All right, well, let me pass this back over to Gerard. But, yeah, I agree. We should try to get together and make a plan of that somehow.
Yeah,
you know, we've already put them. You see, we've already put them all on notice. We have already notified every single state judge, every single federal judge, every single one of them. All of them have already been notified of the subversion against the United States of America by enemies, both foreign and domestic. They're all aware of it, and so is the legislators. You know, both houses. And every governor. They all know. They're all of them are in default in that sense. You know, I don't know that we got to go through paperwork anymore. We just take the paperwork we've already filed and sent to them and resurrect that up to say, hey, you know, you're all in bad behavior. But where do you go with that after that? That we have to really think about the repercussion on something that big, and that in itself could make a mockery at us to some degree. Also, we got to be real careful. I'm not sure we can go that road. And again, not that we shouldn't discuss it. I would like to try to understand how we would make that a reality.
Right, without making it seem like we're the Joker's wild or something. Yeah,
right.
I agree. It's a fine line. Don't know. just had to throw it out there. It just seems like we're stymied every time by the judicial department. So,
yeah, look at that one jury down. I think it was in Florida. They indicted the president, Obama, a couple of years back. That's just too big. You can't start there. You just can't. You got to get some traction going. You know, that's what we're trying to do, is get that traction going. We're building a case. And you know what? Every time they do anything, all they do is help us make our case stronger. That's all they do. And for them to say, for that judge to say what he said, and let's see what this judge, what this magistrate says, but for that judge to say what he said, he committed fraud on the court, because everything he said is just an outright lie. Just read our papers. Everything he said was a lie. It wasn't just wrong. It wasn't a misunderstanding. It was an outright lie. And he defrauded the court by trying to create. And we've seen this before. This has happened to us before, and we were like stunned. What happened, you know? Through a letter, they moved the court. Next thing you know, you're out of the court. You're done. They threw the case out. We didn't understand that way back when. They did that a long time ago to us, a few times. But we've learned from that. Wait a second. Whoa, what are you doing? That's not the – where are the rules? Well, I thought we had some rules here. Don't we have some rules? Isn't a notice of motion to be the way to do this? And aren't you supposed to make record of that and prove that that was served? I mean, what's this letter, this little letter, you know? I mean – we knew already what they were doing. We answered that letter, by the way.
But, you know, John, they're all doing it right down to the top.
I know. It's so like they created new rules that nobody else knows about
but
them.
That association of judges, that international association that's training them, that when they, even a little town judge gets elected, they send them to these schools and they brainwash them. And they tell them, you can make law from the bench and you can do this and you can do that. You know, just the way we lost our school system is the same way we lost our magistrates, because the people that are training them are filling their heads full of baloney. And that whole association that they belong to is treasonous, because it's a foreign entity. It ends up at the UN. It's an international association of judges, and it's a conflict of interest right there. It's a major problem. And you know, any of them that belong to that are committing treason, because they have an oath, so to speak, to a foreign entity. They're supposed to be non-biased, and they're not supposed to be connected to any of this. And they're all making money off the whole thing. That's how they get them. That's what keeps them there, because they're feeding at the trough. And they all have a very good thing going, and that's why they don't have the and one of them is not going to upset the apple cart and turn all the other ones on him. It's a self-policing system, I believe. So we're up against a lot.
Well, so if we want to neuter Mr. Khan, then don't we go see Jit Sessions for that? They ask him to declare all of his judgments in the future to be tainted because he's in bad behavior.
Jeff Session knows everything we're doing. We've copied everything in this court that's been filed. He's got a copy of, and we've been sending him copies as we've been going along. He knows exactly what's going on. That's why we know he's the enemy. Okay. And the next thing for him, one more paper, and after that is a considered indictment there too.
That guy is that she went to school.
Right. That's what I mean.
Yeah, that's the next step. We have one more paper. We will do a show cause with him soon. Again, we don't want to do too much too quick. Let's let them digest what we're doing and then move to the next step. And let them make their stupid moves that they until they realize all they keep doing is inserting foot into mouth, and that's it. They're not making any headway against us at all, any way that they can put up before any people with a brain. That wouldn't see through exactly what's going on. All they're doing is they're just convicting themselves. And look,
no, they're working very hard 24/7 at stealing property, taking children, mm-hmm. robbing homes, messing up probate, you know, mm-hmm. incarcerating people that shouldn't be in there without a jury. So they're working 24/7. I mean, we got really time on our side.
You know, the whole system is created to destroy the people.
Well, there are some arrests of attorneys and stuff going on right now on some of these non-judicial foreclosures where they actually caught them stealing. You know what I mean? And so there's some kind of shakeup going on.
We're catching them stealing, too. They're using, look at, the whole thing is a sham. They don't even really put it out to the public for it. You know, it's like the lawyers themselves that go through the process of selling it to themselves.
Yeah,
and even the court is getting a piece of that pie.
Who is prosecuting these attorneys that Crystal's talking about? There must be a movement afoot. Now, this guy...
Well, you should look into them and see if we can't connect. The problem is they may be too educated.
Well, look, let me tell you, let me just put something in perspective for you. Donald Trump's main guy that's been with him for 30 years is a guy that my wife went to school with, Keith Schiller. He was like his bodyguard. He was a New York City police officer that got into Trump's organization when he retired the police force. And he's been Donald Trump's main guy for 30 years. He's been at his side. That general, what's his name, that's running things there, told him you cannot
Kelly.
Go in to see. Yeah, Kelly told him you're not allowed to talk to the president. If you go in, I want a report of what he said and what you said. And he ordered him not to go in there. Now, I don't know why Donald and Keith Schiller would stand for that.
Well, I think Roger makes a good point. Roger Stone is the and also, you know, what's his name? He was on the show.
Bannon.
Huh?
What was his name?
The show.
Steve.
Alex Jones.
Alex Jones. I just couldn't think of his name. Okay, Alex Jones brought this up too. Look at, they're drugging him. And they do it little by little by little, and before you know, in the evening, his language is slurring, and he's starting to, you know, slow down, and they don't even realize it.
This guy Keith is the guy that tastes the food before the president eats it, so to speak. If he thought the president was being poisoned, it was within his power to have him tested, and Donald would do it.
What the president needs to do now, okay? He needs to go to the lower rankers and order them to arrest these generals. That's what he needs to do.
I agree. I think it's going to take some of the enlisted men and the special forces, because they have a directive through Kennedy that if
they got to be under the command of the president to arrest these people. You know, they can't do it on their own accord. It's a very dangerous thing if they move on their own accord, because that could be the enemy moving through. You know, the last thing we want. Can't have the military doing anything on their own accord. You know, we need maybe the militia, okay? If anybody's going to do anything on their own accord, it's the militia.
Well, the directive from Kennedy said that it was to be the enlisted men and no officers. So he already knew that the officers were a problem. Every team leader
and the president can order these people to arrest these generals, and that's the message he needs to hear, because I don't know if he's hearing that kind of a message. I don't know. You see, he lacks certain knowledge. He's got a lot of knowledge, but I think he lacks certain knowledge. Like, first of all, making Kelly the chief there. I mean, wow. He didn't realize what he was doing, I don't think.
Well,
okay.
He's got all Obama people in there. What happened?
Yeah.
He's got all the old guard in there. I mean, what's he expecting?
Well, he's trying to work with the enemy, but it's going to bite him in the ass, and hopefully he realizes it enough to be able to get out from it. Look at, he does things in ways that nobody else does it, and so he may surprise us all and pull something like, you know.
Well, I think that's one of the ways he got in trouble, because I think he's so smart and he likes to play that cat and mouse game, and I think it comes back and bites him.
He's the guy we need, though. Look at, all he's got to do is visit, a military base and put some orders out to arrest these guys behind him. Arrest them.
Well, you know, they understand that, and they probably, look at this guy, Keith Schiller, I think they threatened his wife and his family. All of a sudden, he's going through a divorce. There's all kinds of garbage going on. That's how they operate. And they do the same thing to Donald Trump. They say, if we do this, we're going to do that. And so they put them under terrible stress. Look, I believe that Ron Paul's wife was poisoned when she got sick. You saw a big change in him at that time, and he switched gears, and he said, well, I just want to – when he was running for president, he said, oh, I'm really not going to win. I just want to get the word out. And that was long before the game was over. I mean, you look at how Donald Trump came in at the last minute because he fought all the way. Ron Paul could have done the same thing, but they scared him out of there, I believe. So this is what we're up against. And so it is a battle against powers and principalities, and ultimately that's what it is. And just like Felicia says, until we get together and everybody comes to that accord and understands and turns their face to our Creator so that victory comes through Him when we turn our face to Him and He has mercy on us, otherwise we're done, I think.
Well, exactly. Look, we're at the mercy of God. We can't possibly win, not of our own accord. We can't. We can only put everything in play, but it's not going to work without, God forcing the dumbass to speak or to stop, or turning themselves against each other. You know, I mean, He does all that stuff.
Well, ultimately, you know, they're going to call. The ultimate thing is they'll try to crack down, and they'll try to come collect guns, and that's going to be their mistake, because I really don't think that they have the control they think they do. I think that they're so compartmentalized that they're not the force that they think they are. I think they're more about psyops, and they really have a big opinion. But meanwhile, one guy doesn't know what the next guy is doing, and that's a problem. And when you have, 300 million armed citizens like we do in America, you're not going to have a cakewalk, and that's going to.
Well, a tipping point may be, and surprisingly, I'm going to wash my mouth out with soap later. Fox News might be that tipping point, because I'm so surprised that they're allowing Fox News to report what they're reporting. And but if Sean Hannity, who I'm just blown away by the things he's saying, I just can't believe it's coming out of his mouth. Maybe he's waking up, I don't know. But maybe all those people over there in Fox News is waking up. I don't know. But however that's happening, whatever's causing that, if the story, what we're hearing about a coup going on in the administration, okay, because what they want to do is make this president, they already got it out, he's senile, he's unfit to be president. I mean, that's president. That's what the big news is putting out there, So, now all they got to do is feed him some drugs little by little, and make him so he can't even think and can't even respond correctly and so on. But if Fox News could become aware of this, I mean, if that's a possibility and realize the seriousness of the story and start reporting on it, that would be the tipping point, because the people then the people are behind him. There's no doubt about it, and it would be a rallying point. But who knows, Again,
you would think his family would know the difference, I mean, there's a lot. He's got a big family, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Anyway.
Well, I think they do know. I think they're under threat. I think they're, the Gestapo is here. I think the reality of what's really going on, they've come to realize it face to face. Maybe that's what I think is going on. And now it's a chess game. And they got control. Nobody sees the president unless they go through this Kelly guy. He's in a lockdown.
Look, if Donald Trump's his own man, if somebody threatens his family, you would think that he would whisper in somebody's ears.
He's got to have a plan. Well, I think
that guy would wake up dead the next morning.
Therein is Roger Stone and a few others maybe, and we there are other things maybe. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or the next week. So,
well, again, you would think there would be some kind of covert action there would be some pushback, and they'd be sticking pins in these guys' veins, and they would be heart attacking them, because he has the same technology available to him, believe me.
Right. Yeah, well, he went to speak to was the CIA, and I think a lot of the people in the CIA realize the evil there and aren't happy with it, and I think that's what that was all about. And so who knows? Maybe there's something working in the works there. And the special forces, like you say, maybe there's something in the works working there. And then there's Roger Stone going on to Alex Jones. He's getting information from the White House, and he's a close friend to the president, even though the guy is a strange guy, not a very morally minded guy, but nevertheless, I don't know. Anyway, you better take your next call.
Yeah. Huh?
John, one last thing. You know, when we were first on here, you used to get on and we would talk about all kinds of things like the extraordinary remedies available to the people and stuff like that. And we have a lot of new people. I think, you know, if we could spend 15 or 10 minutes a week on some of these things that make common law so unique compared to the statutes. I mean, I know you touch on a lot of stuff, but...
Well, last week, I think we had a pretty good call where we touched on a lot of the mechanisms of the court, you know, and how things work. And but we need, you know, look, I try to get this driven by Q&A. I want the people to drive it. If they ask those questions, they'll get those answers. And, you know, there's some very interesting things I'd like to share, but I don't want to get out there teaching these things because then they'll go out trying to figure a way to come after me, and so I got to be careful. You know, we can talk about things. People need to ask the questions.
Sounds good. Because I listened to them shows from, you know, time back there, just trying to stay fresh with everything.
Right.
That's all. All right, I'll let you go.
All right, let me push it back to Gerard. You better go to the next call. It's getting late. You only got two or three more people in the
we'll
queue.
See you,
okay. Take it easy. Okay, next caller. Matthew, you've been unmuted.
It said Matthew. It's actually... Okay, so my name is Catherine O'Neill.
Maddie?
Okay. No, it actually says Matthew, but it's my name is Catherine. So it's Catherine O'Neill. I wanted to introduce myself. Hello. I am the second voice on the Committee of Safety video, the latest one. So, hello.
How you doing?
the COSO, you know, the COS, the Committee of Safety video that Ollie completed, that's me. I'm second voice on that video.
Yeah.
So and I have started my Committee of Safety in Sacramento.
Oh,
and next weekend we have our first what I've been wanting to do this for a very long time called Liberty Warrior Workshop. And my belief is in a different process. I know that the aim of the NLA for the longest time has been in getting established in the courts. And my belief is that it can't be done as effectively at the court level. Is not that that's a bad thing, but I think that baby steps first. And I think that the only way that we're going to actually be able to accomplish this process, and I'm calling it a process, of reestablishing the Constitution and the rule of law, reestablishing law and order, and taking back control of our government, or completely out of control government, in order to do that, you have to have people. You have to have lots of people, and you have to have your media, alternative media, of course. And I say alternative media because the people themselves, we the people ourselves with our cameras, the alternative truth-telling, truth-seeking and truth-telling media that's out there that actually has a presence on the Internet, I want to work this out so that when we capture the process that we're doing, that mainstream media will have to purchase that from the alternatives. So, you know, whatever videos we get. So I want to tell you about this because actually I would like to share our process and what we're doing with our Committee of Safety so that we can maybe hopefully war game this with you guys and you can tell me where you think there may be some holes in our process. So my belief is that in order to accomplish this, because we really seriously don't, anybody who understands Agenda 21, the whole globalist agenda, and, you know, in all seriousness, anybody who understands that whole thing and what's going on, we do not have time. We seriously do not have time to go through political processes and all of that. We actually have to take back control. And I usually tell people the alternative is that we, if this process were not to, if our elected representatives, our public servants, are not taking us seriously in this process. Our lawful next step is to alter or abolish, and we don't have to alter or abolish our chosen form of government. We need to abolish out-of-control public servants.
The usurpers, that's right.
The usurpers. So, now, I have been in the Common Core, the pushback against Common Core, and I like to say as often as possible, I know everything there is to know about Common Core, inside and out, and if there's anything that I don't, I'm not know everything, but I know practically everything. It's been 5 years now, and if there's anything that I don't know about it, I certainly know the person who does. And a couple years back, I started realizing that, of course, it's dwindling because they're not seeing progress with their pushback, and that's because they have been going about it completely the wrong way. First of all, they didn't understand, fully understand, and I'm talking about I'm connected with you know, the big names and, you know, big personalities in the movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched literally hundreds of school board meetings and, you know, city council meetings and things like that across the country in relation to that and other things. So I'm very observant. And so the movement, the people who, whether it's parents, taxpayers, you know, interested Tea Party people, you know, other people like me, educators, legislators, government people, whoever, everybody's got it wrong. Because they're looking at this from the perspective of, you know, the crappy standards and the badness of, you know, everything that goes along in the, everything that's going on at the school board level, or in the school, in the classroom, basically. So they're getting into the weeds of, you know, Common Core, when in actuality, the movement itself is only useful for the number of people that it brings, which is, like I said, dwindling. And the other is the truth about how this came to being. So one of the things that people don't, and another thing too, is that they're making a huge mistake by taking it to their legislators and asking them to fix it. And virtually everyone who's trying to recruit people into the movement to stop Common Core is saying, you know, here's what you can do. Go speak to your legislators. Well, the problem with that is the whole purpose that Obama actually used education for the purpose of subversion of U.S. government. So I know that a lot of people remember when he spoke about, I got a pen and a phone, and the media completely blew up over that, and everybody's just, you know, complaining. You know, everybody's got something to say, all the news outlets, all the talking heads, everyone was all, and to this day, sometimes they will make reference to, you know, I got a pen and a phone, I can write my own laws and yada yada. But there's a 1 minute and 38 second video. If you just go to YouTube and type in Obama pen and phone, and you listen to the one that is 1 minute and 38 seconds long, virtually every single thing he says is about Common Core. I've broken it down. Actually, I did a breakdown of that whole thing and attempted to explain that to my committee so that they could understand that this was not about, you know, what it seemed. And everyone was complaining at the time that he had the nerve to say that. But they had no idea of the substance of what he had said. What he said was, we're not just going to wait for legislation. I don't need Congress. And you know, that doesn't seem to be a problem because, you know, everyone on Fox News or any other outlet, everyone in government and every American practically, refers to the United States as a democracy. And, of course, we are a republic. Well, it's kind of the same thing with, you know, there's a mistaken belief that we have three co-equal branches of government, and we do not. Congress is vested with the most power so that our president wouldn't become a king. But that's exactly what happened here. Obama did not want to be limited by the power of Congress. And so what he said was, these were his exact words, he said, we're not just going to wait for legislation, meaning I'm going to write my own laws. I've got a pen, I'll write my own laws, and I will call my rich friends, Bill Gates, you know, big organizations, big companies, big the data mining companies and the education companies, foreign governments. People want to don't understand, and they're, you know, many parents are up in arms or can't believe that people are, you know, other people are ignoring the fact that there's this huge imbalance in Islamic teaching in schools because those Islamic governments paid for it. And there are many also Islamic investors, and so we've got CARE in our government and all of that. They paid for it. That's why. So I've got a pen. I'm gonna write my own laws, and I'm gonna have every rich friend that I can get, you know, call with my phone to pay for it. That is a subversion that is out in the open. That was a proclamation. That actually, that statement that he was making, that 1 minute and 38 seconds I'm talking about, is a clip of his proclamation, which was actually a press conference before the State of the Union address in 2014. Because by the end of 2013, all 45 states that had signed on for Common Core had executed their contracts. This wasn't an act of government. This was an act of subversives that are seated in our government. But when you went to your state legislators or you went to U.S. legislators, they didn't know anything about it. So it's completely inappropriate to take something that had nothing to do with it. And like I said, it was not an act of government in any way, shape, or form. It was specifically for the purpose of putting this in place and getting, well, actually, 45 states actually signed the contract with the two non-governmental, unelected, unaccountable trade associations, being the CCSSO and NGA. They're the owners of the standards. The state signed on for Common Core with those two agencies, with the, you know, the owners of the standards. And everything that came along with that contract, everything related to Common Core, was now outside of government purview.
Well, that's
so our elected...
That's a treasonous thing, because that's... Their,
absolutely.
They're contracting with a foreign corporation. And look, there's nothing new under the sun here. Look, all our forefathers were in a committee of safety, and there was a reason for that. Because
right.
they couldn't assemble at the normal town hall meeting. They had to assemble outside of that, and that's what we need to do today. Look, you could go into your town and assemble enough people, and when you get enough people assembled and educated, you can march into your town board and you could tell them you are to rescind this right now, or we're going to have you arrested.
Well, the language actually from the very beginning of, you know, from people that you know are in school boards and you know, they're getting elected to school boards and they're trying to, you know, to make a change and change things and fix things from the inside, but it can't be done. It can't be done that way. Unless you fully are talking about what I'm talking about, I'm very intense. I got to tell you, I'm extremely intense. So I don't mean to offend anybody, but I got the answer. That's all I can say is I have the answer. All I need is people. But I need more people. I've got my committee of safety, and it's growing and everything, but I need more people, and that's
well,
kind of
the
direction I'm going.
The school board
here,
only has control over 4% of the budget. It's all put in by the state.
Well, the thing about this whole deal with Common Core is this, and this is why I was saying, you know, taking back government and actually doing this process has to happen with the school boards. There is a possibility that there's some other way to do it, but I haven't seen it. And if it is, I'm going to quit what I'm doing and do with, you know, what you're doing, or whoever has a better idea, that's what I'm going to do. But right now, I haven't heard or seen of anybody that has this process down. And the thing is this, the school boards, the individual school board trustees, that's who you go for. That's who we're going for, because not only does the school board, not only is the school board not required to adopt and enforce unlawful laws, which is what Common Core is. When your state signed on, the governors, unbeknownst to most of them, but that's, you know, those, that kind of stuff is debatable too, and the state superintendent of public instruction, when they signed on for Common Core, what they did was they eliminated, they were complicit in the act of, you could call it treason, but actually what it is subversion. I mean, it is identical to, you know, the whole Bolshevik thing where they came in and, you know, slashed the heads off the royal family without all the, you know, bloody stuff and bloody stuff. I mean, right. That's literally what it is. This was the death. This was a death blow to the Constitution, because what it did was, this is the first time in U.S. history that I know of, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that this is the first time in U.S. history that we've had a de facto system of government signed onto technically it's all states, all 50 states, because that actually has to do with a statewide longitudinal data system, and all 50 states were paid by the federal government to do that. So they're all connected. So whether they call it Common Core and whether those other states actually signed on to Common Core, they're doing Common Core. They're all connected to the federal government. It's not there's no difference. So call it what you want, but that, yeah, all 50 states are actually doing it. If you're in a public school, you are tied in with the federal government. There's, you know, that's just how it's going right now. So but anyway, you know, the you know, when the governors did that, and it's not even you go to the governors first, because that's further down the line. They did that. The state Department of Education, they did it too. They signed on. They're guilty too. They're all culpable. But it's the school boards. It's the individual school board trustees that ultimately it is their duty. Their primary function for even existing is to protect sovereignty, the sovereignty of the people and state sovereignty. And they're not doing that. Actually, what they did was not only are they not required to adopt and enforce those unlawful laws, they are strictly prohibited from it. So they have committed an act of treason, an act of subversion as well. So my plan is actually, we go in with our little, not little, it's going to be pretty good size, Committee of Safety. And we go in and we say, hey, school boards. I know, by the way, I've already put my school board on notice. It's been a year, but I did it anyway. I have a pretty decent video of me having addressed the board, you know, sort of a multi-pronged thing that I did, which was, one, I wanted to show everybody who was bemoaning the fact that they can't get more than 1 or 2 minutes in public comment, and the boards were not taking them seriously on their pushback on Common Core, and they wouldn't put it on the agenda. And I kept saying, you don't have to get it on the agenda, and you don't even have to really talk about Common Core and the details of Common Core. You just go in and say, hey, you know what, this is a subversion of U.S. government, a subversion of U.S. Constitution, and, you know, be on notice. This is something that needs to end henceforth or else. So when we go in with our, you know, this is obviously going to be a well-planned procedure that we're going to be doing here, but we go in and say, hey, listen, we know you didn't know. We didn't know. We had to get educated ourselves. And then once we knew, because there's that thing called the deliberate dumbing down of America, and if it hadn't been for that, this could never have happened. This kind of thing can never happen to an educated citizenry. So we know, and out of this pool of ignorance, we elect our representative government. And so we know, and we have mercy. We know you didn't know. So we're going to give you the opportunity to remedy that. And the way that you do that, you have two options here. Number one, you can, you know, we have the foremost authorities in this country. One, my friend Michael Budnarik. Another one is my friend Chris Ann Hall. They have great programs you can sign up for, and it's going to cost you lots of money. Maybe it's $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000. But this, you're going to have to take this course in order to keep your job, because we're not playing anymore. If you are not constitutionally literate, if you are not constitutionally qualified, you may not serve in our government. And so we're going to give you the opportunity to get educated and become constitutionally compliant. And so somebody asked me, well, how are you going to account for all of that if you start expanding out of your district and yada, yada? And I said, I don't care. They pay for the program. People like Chris Ann Hall, it's time for them to get paid to do this. And it's time for them to teach other people like me and you and other people who to become qualified now to, you know, cram 50 or 50 for me, 55 years worth of knowledge into our heads that we should have gotten since kindergarten and didn't. So it's time for us to be, for someone like Chris Ann and Michael, it's time for them to really get paid. This is what they do, and they can, you know, we can help them to get paid for that, so that we can teach other people and teach our legislators and our school boards and our elected people what they need to know in order to keep their jobs. And actually, it's more intense than just keeping their jobs. It actually is a matter of them staying out of prison. Because each and every single, and I've made a case too that nobody's been able to prove me wrong yet, but there are zero public servants in government, in any sort of level of government. And I exclude military, but not law enforcement. By the way, I am the daughter of a law enforcement officer. My life is completely surrounded. We're a law enforcement family. So I have an affinity for law enforcement. However, I can give you just as a side note, I got pulled over and I had a little conversation with a motorcycle cop that gave me a ticket. And, well, he did more than that, actually. He towed my car as I was driving without a license, but which I need to fix. But he mentioned to me that he may not know the Constitution of the United States, but he knows all the code and statutes of the state of California. And I said, well, that's wonderful, and I'm really proud of you. But unfortunately, you did not swear an oath to support and defend the code and statute of the state of California. It was the Constitution of the United States. So let me ask you, what are the five provisions of the First Amendment? You know, how many articles are in the Constitution? And he, just like everybody else, doesn't know that. And I've asked every legislator I could get my hand in, every sworn, elected, or appointed representative in our government service. And I'm in California, I'm in Sacramento, so I'm at the state capitol quite a bit. And I tell you, the number of people that have responded, and I've asked nearly 2,000 people in the last, it's been 4 years now. And the number of people that can respond to that actually accurately is zero. So I'm making a case that there are zero elected or appointed sworn representatives in government that are unimpeachable. Start to finish, top to bottom, you know, local school board, city council, you know, mosquito killer, all the way to President of the United States. There is a laundry list on each and every one, a laundry list of laws that they're breaking, mostly out of ignorance and some absolutely deliberately on purpose. But what difference does it make? Because ultimately, what do? You give them the opportunity to fix it. Oh, gosh, I made a mistake. I'm going to have to go to school. I'm going to have to learn how to be constitutionally compliant. That's great. When you do that, that's wonderful. About the accounting part, if they pay for their class and they blow us off and they say, nah, that's okay, I'm going to call your bluff, that's all right. But you had better get it right, because the very first time that you violate the Constitution and you do an act of government that is not pursuant to the U.S. Constitution, we will prosecute you. And
that's why you should be educating your sheriff at the same time that you're going after the school board. You should be having conversations with your local sheriff.
Well, a really good thing about that is because my dad is a sheriff. He's a retired sheriff now. Actually, he's friends with the sheriff.
I think that's
and. True. Yeah, so I have an in that area, so that's really great.
If you're going to threaten to prosecute them, it's nice to have a law enforcement official that knows the Constitution, that they can come back.
Right. Well, now a couple of things about that. In my county, our sheriff fancies himself a constitutionalist. He fancies himself and touts himself as a constitutional sheriff.
As,
so,
as many of them do.
Yeah, they do. So if that's the case, then, and so there are multifacets to this whole thing. When, you know, you have somebody who does that, and actually he ran for Congress last election, but he didn't make it. So I need to find out what his aspirations are. But it's always a benefit, because we're getting close to 2018. It's always a benefit if they're going to be running for office, because then, okay, great. You know, you're, and of course, those people who are, Trumpsters, I should say, people who love Donald Trump, and the reason that you know, Donald Trump got, you know, so much support is because people, I still maintain that most people don't even know what they were hearing, but they really liked it. You know, it's patriotic, it's American, it's, you know, freedom and liberty, it's rights, it's make America great again, it's all those things that they like to hear. So we need to sort of sail along on those coattails where we can, you know, continue on in that vein and recruit those people to what we're doing. We need to maintain that whole thing. So that's another reason why time is of the essence, because, well, for a number of reasons. Like I said, there's so much to this, but I'm trying to skim over sort of the surface.
Can I ask you something? Have you taken our Constitution course?
Have taken the Constitution course and the Civics course.
Right. So you've seen Bagnarik's now. How do you think they and Christiane Hall? I don't know. Does she give a Constitution course? I don't know too much. I know, and I listened
about Christiane. Yeah, she is a Constitution course, a Roots of Liberty. She's got videos. She has a book. She has Liberty First University, which is that was such a great benefit. Michael is a personal friend of mine, so I speak to him all the time. So I've got my own personal. You know, I think Christiane is wonderful, and she teaches. You know, almost everything there is to know. She teaches, but I don't want to get too far into that thing with, you know, Christiane. I don't want to say too much about it, but I think that because she's still a bar attorney and she's doing that for a reason, and I think it's very good for that, because I know her personally too, but I don't talk to her about that, but I believe that she's doing that for a reason, and I kind of agree with it. But Michael is not. He teaches common law. He teaches, you know, and he's not below the radar in terms of that. So there are two different perspectives, but I honestly believe that Michael is probably this country's foremost authority in U.S. history, Constitution, our founding documents, you know, the 800 years of history that you know, gave us our founding documents and brought us to where we are. So, you know, so yeah, that I've done all those classes, and I've been studying this for, you know, it's going on 5 years. Well, I've been paying attention since 9/11, but I didn't actually know. I didn't even know what I didn't know until I started learning. I started with Common Core back in late 2012, early 2013, and it's just been nonstop since then. I don't work. I don't do anything else. I work like crazy, but I don't get paid for it. But this is all I do. I'm actually my sole focus in life is on restoring the Constitution and restoring you know, the rule of law and order. So I just believe the other thing is, because I was saying that Common Core is died down. It's, you know, the people that are diehard. You know, I was on a team of here in California, on a team of university level. They are PhDs. They were researchers in other areas, but they quit doing what they were doing because they're moms and started researching. We have incredible minds in here in California on everything you could want to know, the testing, all that kind of stuff. Everything about Common Core, except the concept that I'm talking about, because I'm still, if anybody has a normal life, they don't know that stuff. And what you and I are all working on, the NLA type stuff, They're not onto that yet. So their focus is still on the education component. And I just say, when you're if you're wanting to use anybody wanting to use Common Core as a way, you know, talking about education, that kind of thing, to stop Common Core, you have to literally eliminate the standards, the crappiness of the, you know, classroom and all that stuff, that everything is going on in school, the education component completely. Because as bad as it is, that's not the problem. The problem is that the government, our government, you know, there's nobody in our government who's either knowledgeable enough to properly apply the, you know, they're not living by their job description. They're not knowledgeable enough to apply the Constitution or stay within their constraints, or they're deliberately subverting it. So, and it doesn't matter to me whether it's intentional or not. The bottom line is you are, you know, operating outside of it. You're violating every right that we have under the sun, and you are not, if, you know, if you don't know the Constitution, how can I trust you to defend it? So it's the, you know, all of them are prison bound, you know, unless we are able to fix it. Now, obviously, people are not going to, you know, we're not going to go and, you know, throw everybody in jail. That's not what we're going to do. We have to do this, you know, how do you eat an elephant, right? A bite at a time. So we do this at the school board level. Here in California, we have a huge, huge benefit, but I promise you, it is coming to you if it's not in your state. It is coming to you. Here in California, we have SB 277 and 792. That is the K-12 vaccine, so-called vaccine mandate. It was a requirement for a total of 69, actually now 71, doses of vaccines for K-12 students in public and private schools. Well, private schools that are, you know, Title IX or Title I schools. So these two, because the enforcement mechanism is the schools, the vaccine people, this is a great opportunity to recruit the vaccine movement, because the enforcement mechanism for the vaccine tyranny is the schools. And these two movements are mutually exclusive. Even though I run a Facebook page, it's called, it's an advocacy group, actually. It's called Concerned Parents of Elk Grove on Facebook. And even though, you know, I'm connected with, you know, the leaders of these groups and everything everywhere, and I'm also in the, I actually filed a recall against the senator who authored that bill. And unfortunately, I handed it to a movement to ruin spectacular, and they did spectacularly. I don't mind saying. So it didn't go anywhere. But that's a whole nother story. I would love to share that whole story, but just very briefly.
Listen, I think you're on the right track with the Committee of Safety and the board, the school board, because that's the local effect. Look, all politics starts on a local level. So, you know,
right.
Take your town back and your county back. The federal government has no place to put its foot. Look, we got it. We're 13 minutes over. I hate to cut you off, but we should expound upon this more, because I do believe that with your committees of safety on the local level, and I know Chris Ann Hall loves the local thing as opposed to the federal courts. You know, she thinks that you could do more on the local level, and in a certain sense, she's right, because you have more influence at that point.
Well, when you go in and you say to your local, you know, I mean, well, just look at it this way. If you go, you know, we go in with our committee of safety and we say, hey, listen, this is what the deal is. We got the sheriff here, and, you know, the sheriff. Earlier, you guys were talking about the DAs and the grand juries and all of that. Well, you know, each and every single person on the school board is. They are liable. They are actionable, each and every single one. So, and that's everywhere in all counties at every single school board in this country. So, let's just say my district here. So I go to our school board and we say, hey, like I said, we know you didn't know. We're going to give you the opportunity to fix it. And so you can go to school and learn and keep your job. And terrific. We fully expect for you all to do that. The truth of the matter is, I fully expect for some of them to say, if not all of them to say, yeah, go pound sand. Okay, that's fine. Because what we're going to do now is we're going to take our laundry list of laws that you have broken, okay, and there are many, and we've already done the work, and we're going to hand that to, we're going to file with our county grand juries. And we've already done the work, so we already know, and we're sharing with other people so that they're getting outraged too. Look at all these laws that they've broken, and we're outing them. Well, we will be. I actually haven't started it yet because I want to do it like shock and awe, not just a little bit at a time, but I mean shock and awe. No time to think about it. And I don't want them to have any warning. So you give them the opportunity to, we're giving the grand jury, we've done all the work. Now they can look do their investigation, which they're required to do, and they can add to it, but there is no way, there are no grounds for them not to refer that to the district attorney. The district attorney is also an oath taker. We are keeping him to his oath of office.